Good afternoon. Sorry. Yeah. One thing I enjoyed about being a teacher is that when you say good morning and good afternoon, they hear good, yeah, I mean, you hear good morning and good afternoon response back. And then you come to radio, so you just, all you just have to do is say good afternoon and assume someone on the other end is saying good afternoon.
I'm a dog, please don't. Like these people at these main events where they show up and they go like, good morning, and then everyone is like, wow. And then they say, please, people, it's still early in the day.
Uh-huh.
Then they say, good morning again. And then everyone goes like, good morning.
Good morning, say.
And I'm like,
how are you? We are fine, and how are you? That's where we all started learning English, people.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
That was high school.
Yeah, definitely not high school. Yeah.
Every level of school.
Yeah. But, you know, the humor part aside, good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. As usual, we're here to keep you company from, we are 7 minutes into the hour of four and we are going until the hour of seven. And today's discussion is based on how the tourism industry is looking, globally. And from the look of things, Africa is, Africa is benefiting, is having a lot of benefits in terms of seeing the, the increase in number of, a number of tourists emanating from, because of the ongoing Middle Eastern tit for tat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Helmut, this is something, okay, let's say this. Here's one assumption we have to outline, and I know it's in the statistics.
Yeah.
That we're obviously going to be sharing with the listeners right now. So, this is taking a look, guys, at the global tourism, sort of like report card, because this comes from the UN tourism body. This is the tourism barometer from that measured the first 3 months. And it highlights here that the first quarter of this year, meaning the first 3 months, had an increase of 2% in global tourism. And the two continents that enjoyed the strongest performance in the first 3 months was Europe and Africa.
Yeah.
Now, I will also combine this, Helmut, with an article I recently wrote. It's on the Villager website. Dear listeners, you can also sign up and regularly visit the Villager website. That's also where we contain a lot of our articles from the Villager e-paper. So it's just the Villager Namibia e-paper, and you'll find it. So 2-3 weeks back, I wrote this article about the May 2026 hospitality stats, Helmut, but that's hospitality and occupancy. Remember, that's beds.
Yeah.
The UN tourism speaks about overall tourist activity,
mm-hmm.
which can include flights, which can include just immigration numbers potentially as well, which can include, you know, a myriad of other, because tourism is such a big metric that you're trying to measure.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have to go and look for car rentals. You'll have to go and look for occupancy, for example. You'll have to go and look for bookings made through booking.com and those other particular digital platforms. And there's a ton of those platforms, bruh. Hey, all I did now was search here on the Android, Google store now, and the Google Play store. You should see the amount of, booking apps, travel apps that's available just for Android.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know at what level they are potentially for the iOS, but for Android, I was like, what? Look at all these particular avenues in terms of which a tourist can just book either accommodation or potentially something, or buy a ticket maybe. That's so much. Now, these guys, the UN tourism guys, so they looked at traveled. Because the first statement in the first paragraph starts there with some 307 million tourists traveled international in the first 3 months of this year. So that highlights to you potentially they were looking at a metric known as the airplane tickets. Basically, just starting from the travel itself. And then they looked at, what's the other one? It primarily cites or starts from a travel perspective. And I am combining this global view with some of the spillover benefits or, the particular performance that Namibia has enjoyed up until May this year. Because in May, the hospitality industry's performance outperformed May 2026
mm-hmm.
outperformed May 2019 pre-COVID. So this
that's
means
just hospitality.
That's just occupancy rate, hospitality, booking a room, booking a bed, you know, that kind of stuff. It outperformed Helmut May 2019. So this already is an indicator in terms of what was measured in these first 3 months, actually cascaded further into May for us. Because remember, May in Namibia is the start of the summer season for the Northern Hemisphere people. May is introducing us into the winter season.
Yeah.
And May is introducing the summer season for those guys. Yeah. Which is what many people also don't know in like places like Namibia is that the Europeans get a holiday, Helmut, a month holiday. Let me say it again. If you are an employee, if you're employed in a company in Europe,
mm-hmm.
you get a month off. Just a month to gallivant, go crazy, mark your hooter. Just, I'm not saying do other wild stuff, but you get a month. In the warm weather.
Oh, no, that explains a lot because I came across a story of a cruise ship that was refused port in Turkey and Egypt.
Yeah.
That was filled with
celebrating. I thought that thing was a joke.
Was it just a what?
I thought that thing was a joke. It was you that posted that thing, was.
Oh, no.
Who was it? Who posted it?
You thought it was a joke?
I thought it was a joke.
Nice. Well, just out there having a good time. Look, after Hunter virus, I don't think I'm not saying.
Please don't explain to the listeners what that cruise ship was all about.
No.
The defining moment as to why it was refused.
Defining moment. The thing is, I think, one thing that we seem to forget is that, socializing is needed.
Yeah.
It's not wanted. It's needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, how often, even here, was that last year? I'm not sure if that was on Home Run or on Mind the Gap when we were talking about work related burnout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, that's a real thing. Work takes a serious psychological toll on you. And the more your psychology is impacted, it also begins to impact your physical, your physical anatomy.
Yeah.
So, which is why it's needed to go out and blow off some steam, every now and then. Just a weekend out that's why we do things like, go and eat out. It's not that, it's not that you just want to splash money on the food that you could have cooked at home.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a change of scenery. There are a lot of things that goes into maintaining, let me just say, the psychology and the physical, the physical being of a person.
Yeah.
I think this is where, things like tours now comes in. Depends on what you enjoy. That's the tour that you're going to go to. If you like hiking, then you can go hiking. If you want to go and see, exotic culture, then you can go to, take for example, to Asia, whatever part of the world that you find whose culture fascinates you.
Mm.
Then you can just go and walk around with them and live with them and maybe try their food and different cultural songs and dance and all that. And if you just want to go and see the metropolis of Tokyo, you can do that.
Yeah.
As long as you have the money to afford the ticket that will lead you to wherever it is that you want to go. So, but this is something that is slowly. Being adopted on at least on a large commercial scale, in a lot of developing countries. And I know in Namibia, we make fun, we make jokes all the time, especially in December, that, guys, going to the village is not a holiday.
Why not? Going to the village can be a holiday.
It's not a holiday. You're supposed to go somewhere on vacation. And then my defense to that was, look, it is a holiday for two reasons.
It's what happens at the village.
Affordability. What happens at the village?
You know, what's the other accusation of many of our fellow Namibians who run away from Windhoek at every December? They run away from here, which is the 8 to 5.
Yeah.
And they run to the village or to Swakop.
When you say they run, you're making it sound like they offended Joseph Shikongo. Okay. Joseph Shikongo is still stuck in my head.
It's not the new lady. We have to know and we have to learn her name. It's okay. It's nothing criminal that they're doing, but
yeah, no, it's nothing criminal.
At the rate at which they take their annual leaves at the end of the year. So sometimes people still work with the description of that it's the wedding season, which technically is starting was from last month, all the way now to the end of the year, the wedding season.
Yeah.
But for those that are already
just 1 month for divorce, January. But go on.
Okay. Don't be that pessimistic, but yeah. You know, we're trying to wish, you know, positivity
If I'm too broke to get married.
And make the good vibes reverberate everywhere.
Look, if I'm too broke to get married, yeah. I'll just trash talk marriage until I have money to get married. Then I'll start, you know.
Or you will continuously, every time that you get paid, you recharge the marriage.
Yeah.
So 3 weeks of the month, you are divorced. In the fourth week,
definitely,
you're married again. That's not. Please, guys, don't take our advice, ne?
Don't.
None of us are married. Mm-hmm. Okay, Helmut is symbolically married. I'm not married.
Symbolically. Oh yeah, I'm symbolically. Polygamous.
Listen now, who's remembering his commitments?
You think any one of them is listening?
Yes. They definitely been listening. So it's even making me cough now. So, when people run away every December for their holidays.
Yeah.
For those running to the coast, they go bump into their bosses at the coast who they were trying to escape by being at the coast, not knowing that the boss also owns a property at the coast. And for those that obviously go to the village, whether it be north, south, east, west, now you go there and your grandmother or your mother decides that you have to come and work some more.
Yeah, December is plowing season.
Yes. Now, that's why I said, Hamun, it can be a holiday destination. It can become a slightly more homely setup. In my perspective, I probably would have been disowned if I experienced the same kind of, I'm running away from work to come and rest. Now you're making me work again. I wouldn't have been the best son, I know. At that moment, because I would have countered such logic. You can't make me work some more.
Mm-hmm.
If I only have this 1 week, this 1 month to recharge. So yeah, now it can become a tourist situation set up, but this is also where I believe once again that local authorities have to play a bigger role.
Mm-hmm.
The local authorities have themselves to invest in, let's for example say, just tar a road, man. Into the rural communities around your constituencies. Just put up some street signs, some indicators of something that says this is now, Dwight's Bridge or Helmut's collective of a community. Because people would really like to escape to other parts of Namibia and they would really like to engage in and interact with other parts of Namibia. People don't want to just run to Swakop and then go bump into their bosses, their ex-bosses, their ex-girlfriends, their ex-husbands, ex-wives, ex-boyfriends at the same coast in Swakop. That's not what a holiday for Namibians.
Ex-Bentens.
Ex-sugar babies. You know, since I would mention Bentens. Ex-sugar babies. We can't just have one coastal hotspot. And it can't just be Henties, Valvis, and Swakop. Lutris also now has to pull up its weight for a change, for a change.
You do realize there is a reason why we are locating all the wind turbines there, right?
I know.
That but, means if I have to go to... look,
But have you seen the photos of Lüderitz, Hermon? Lüderitz is it's a scenic place.
I'm talking about the wind, right?
So we are on tourism, you sure?
So that means if you weigh less than 50 kg, you'll need a backpack that has at least a couple of rocks to increase the weight. So back to tourism.
We talk about tourism, not about... I'm sure the clothing and everything that's in that backpack will do sufficient justice to hold the person down.
I know three, spaghetti body type people that will be blown away by that wind.
Who?
I don't want to mention any names. No.
Who, Helmut, are you talking about here? You are surprised. Spaghetti type people they can be dense in weight or mass.
How many spaghetti type people do you know?
I played sport against a few, and you know, when you accidentally
run into
one of them, you know, those tackles hurt. Just because you've got a lot more flesh on you, you know, somehow that.
I think that would be. I thought that was that would be advantageous for you because it would be some kind of a cushion.
No, some of the most resilient people that I've played sport with were people that you could see their bone to body mass.
Mm-hmm.
The person would be taller than me, but they'll be, because of obviously how their body works, slightly, they'll be slim.
Yeah.
I'm saying slim, Helmut, because you can't see body fat on that person.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, unfortunately, the one cousin that I've got where his dad banned him from playing rugby ever again because he was breaking so many bones.
Ew.
He just gets one tackle, bone broken, and then his dad said, no, just concentrate on your athletics.
Yeah.
Rather do high jump and you're sprinting and you leave the rugby for the other idiots, which was now the rest of us. And sports tourism is obviously also something picking up because of the Football World Cup that's now taking place.
Yeah.
There are detractors that don't like what America has turned this World Cup into, not just the US red card scandal, but the start of this. When I told you that thing when we had the last tourism discussion, for a Namibian to get a visa to South Africa to the US, do you have 300,000 lying around? No. So then, yeah, just invest in your pay-per-view TV package, and rather view the thing from here. That's it. But for where you can go to, Helmut. Let's share with our listeners some of the nice details. So I sometimes like doing this exercise where I would look at, because Google has a function known as Google Travel, and it also shows you like airplane ticket costs.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, between last night and this morning, I just, you know, was musing about will I be able to get to Reunion? What's the current prices? You know, you sometimes ask that question. So I looked at now Reunion. Is an extension of the French Republic. Reunion.
Yeah.
So it's an extension of the mainland of the French, of France proper.
Yeah.
I looked at it because obviously other details like your visas, you know, will play a separate role in terms of achieving a visa, of getting there. But just the plane, you start with a plane ticket. And I said, 14,000 between, I looked I picked a random date in August. And, you know, you count a week, you know, 6-7 days to another date in August. I said, 14 grand return ticket through South Africa, Johannesburg to Saint-Denis in Reunion. That's their capital.
That's just a ticket.
14,000 to go there and to come back. It's one price. That means it's 7,000 something to fly one direction.
Yeah.
Then I looked at, okay, let's compare this because that's in the African influence zone. Let's compare this price. Let's say if I fly to one of the destinations I would like to go to, Naples in Italy. In the same days in August, 11,000. I'm like,
so it's much cheaper.
So I can sacrifice, I can save up like 3, 2, salaried months and then buy the plane ticket. And then I can budget for the visa later on. A plane ticket, return ticket, fly and come back. Yeah. I was like, things are really technically looking up for an African if you want to go to the, if you want to go and visit Europe. But things don't look up for you as an African if you want to visit the other African
countries.
Yeah. That's why I always advise people, rather, if they want to go to South Africa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're a minister's child, splatter the money on a flight ticket, a two-hour flight here to Joburg or to Cape Town. Yeah, spend the money.
I think this is where, you know, I think this is where a rail transport now is would come in very handy, because I think, okay, you know, one thing I like about rail transport is that it doesn't take the traditional road where you are driving in between, you know, urban centers for the most part.
Yeah.
You have this forested panoramic view, like savanna, depending on the terrain that your country finds itself in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you get to enjoy a lot of the sight views of, or, you know, of the environment around you. That is not a town or someone's fenced or farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think now just picture a train a passenger train that that takes off from Windhoek, and then you can go through Harare, you can go through Zimbabwe or Zambia into Tanzania or Ethiopia. That would be one heck of an experience in terms of you know the view that you're gonna have. But I don't think the planes don't have that. It's just you and clouds, and then you land.
Helmut, I was on some scary planes there. They're in Russia. It's you a metal. You know, if you fly between continents and countries, that airplane has a lovely, its fuselage has this lovely sort of like extra layers of between you and the environment outside at 5,000 meters in the sky.
Yeah.
But that 2024 flight where we had to fly from Moscow, from Moscow to Sochi and then from Sochi to Yekaterinburg, us, that Namibian cluster of journalists. I sat there looking at this plane and I was like, you know, it just takes that one unfortunate event. And then we all are like a can of Coke here in the middle of this, in the middle of that sky. A can of Coke. And that's what I sat there looking at myself. I was like, do I just wish for this 2 hours to go by quickly? But,
so, in other words, you were on a plane that, if it was a car somewhere in Southern Africa, it would be a Donkey Botswana.
No, Donkey Botswana is reliable.
Jeez, if Donkey Botswana, actually Donkey Botswana is reliable.
It's reliable. Yeah. I'm talking about if it was a car, it would have been a donkey car.
Oh, boy.
But here's the thing. You can see the value that it offers, for example, like to the Russian market. Now,
in terms of internal travels.
Yeah, and the distances. Because it doesn't make sense. Look, if you want to be romantic and enjoy geography, you take the train ride across Russia.
Yes.
But it'll be long. Because it is uneconomical to try and drive the whole Russia on a car. But if you're trying to get to South Africa from Windhoek, I will tell you, buy a coach ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Buy a coach ticket. How much you will see this lovely road here from Rehoboth?
Mm.
I won't say from Windhoek, from Rehoboth.
Yeah.
On the other side of Rehoboth. You will see how lovely the country looks by coach. And when you get across the Orange River into the North Cape of South Africa, you'll see how lovely that area looks like. And then you understand the geography and the scale and the sights and the sounds of what Southern Africa looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have the money, sure, fly to Joburg, fly to Cape Town. It just doesn't make sense to me to fly if South Africa's right here.
You know, now that you brought up that different form of transport and the luxury they offer you into seeing the environment around you as you move from your point A to point B, aka your destination.
Yeah.
I think fellow broke people will understand.
We're no fellow. We are all part of that that category, that demographic, Helmut.
There's a difference between being broke and being financially deficient.
Or temporarily underfunded.
Yeah. Now, look, when I...
sounding worse than an investment promo.
I know.
Temporarily underfunded.
Can you make it any more darker? look, the thing is, from my experience, in, not just in Windhoek, but in all the urban areas that I've been to, I think, being broke enabled me to know the town much better.
Yeah,
because for the most part, much of the distances that I, that I got to know, let me just say, I got to know more distances either by walking or taxi or bicycle than through a car.
Yeah.
So because take for example, if you are you are just going from point A to point B, if you have your own car, for example, because you have a calculated route. But if you're in a cab, for example, you have to take 3, 4, 5 detours because they'll have to drop off, all these people. So one thing that I enjoy, that I used to enjoy until I basically got to get tired of Windhoek is coming home. Coming to work, I'll just come at least an hour early so that I can just hop in any cab because I don't want to inconvenience the driver because I know that, okay, first of all, I don't have a car. This is public transport.
Yeah,
because it's being used by everyone.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell him to drop me first just because I couldn't keep my time. Yeah, so,
Oh no, I circumvent that.
How?
Sometimes I tell the cab driver, listen, I've got $30 for you. Can you take me to my stop?
Yeah, you can do that.
And then he says yes. And then there's like three passengers already in the car and they haven't paid this. They were just, uploaded on that, take me there and I promise to pay.
You'll make an excellent lobbyist. But look, the thing
is. I need to tell you a story also about that.
Oh boy.
Yeah. But go on, Helmut, go on.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, it's a walking and cab. There are two things that that got me to know Windhoek, much faster.
Yeah,
it was two things, mostly cab because walking heavily not advisable, especially when it gets darker, and also those are shortcuts. So. So
avoid the shortcuts.
Yeah. So the same can be said when it comes to traveling outside your country. You can, if you have the money, you can catch a flight. It's much faster. They all have their pros and cons, although to different degrees.
Yeah.
You can catch a flight and you're going to get there faster, but you're not going to enjoy. But if you want to get there faster, you can catch a flight if you have the money. But if you're not in a hurry and you want to enjoy the scenery, then take a bus.
Yeah.
Or just get a rental. And because then you just be driving as slow as you can. There are two, there's a British couple I ran into in 2019 when I was at Arnos.
Mm.
They told me that they were driving. I think all the way, they were driving all the way from Etosha. Yeah. Now I'm looking at that distance and I sort of like felt pity for them. You know what? That's a very long ride. They were like, no, it's not a big deal. We're just driving as slow as possible so we can take in the view.
Mm.
That's when I realized, oh, hang on a second, that is actually true.
Mm. They stop. Helmut, you don't know. I think you've also seen them. But there are so many self-drives of the tourists in Namibia.
Yeah.
Just yesterday here, this spa shop here close to us. The parking lot was full of 4 buckies, similar rental buckies. And they were packing up. I think they just bought like their road supplies,
mm-hmm.
packed it up full of that stuff, and they went on their way. I could hear that they were, is it French or Spanish? French or Spanish, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
So they love doing this. Now, to Namibians, if you're a shop owner, that's good business. That's what you see there. Mm-hmm. It's good business. They are buying bulk. You get to order more. More money is spent on you mm-hmm. than the average Namibian spends on you.
Yeah.
That's good business.
However, as our discussion of seeing that talk we had yesterday, the one about can, you remember the example of the hosting of the AFCON with
yeah.
Botswana?
Yeah.
Can Namibia get to the next level?
Of making, like just a hospitality type of services
yeah,
to the scale that is required to host an event like yes. AFCON.
Yes. So now we're not talking about just Windhoek. Because in many scenarios, and that's why I liked, for example, when we did the World Economic Forum discussion where Wamkele Mene from AFCFTA,
mm-hmm.
and remember the South African guy, the Johan Strydom, the guy from Old Mutual?
Old Mutual, yeah.
Yeah. When those two guys started talking, did you see how silent the other Africans went? Because those two guys were talking like business strategy. So Strydom basically went and said, let's not look at Africa as 54 different economies.
Yeah.
Because that makes it difficult for his company.
Mm-hmm.
But what they are trying to find is how to look at Africa as one economy.
One economy.
So you show up with one product and you try to match every economy in that scenario. Yeah. Doesn't matter about language, doesn't matter about tradition or culture or whatever. If that product is automatically, can be automatically sort of like absorbed mm-hmm. into that economy,
yeah.
way better. Now, for him, it sounds, sometimes in Afrikaans, we say, the word simple is doesn't actually meet the sort of like understanding of how simplistic he's trying to explain it. In Afrikaans, we say it's eenvoudig. It corresponds with German's einfach. It's eenvoudig. So the simplistic element he's trying to say is just ship out products from South Africa. I know what the South Africans want to do.
Mm.
Which we Namibians also know what the South Africans want to do. Which Mr. Branch also showed us yesterday. What the South Africans love doing. The South Africans want to export as much as possible to the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to import as much as possible from the rest of us. They don't want to do the importation from us. But they want to do all the exportation to us. So it's a balancing act. I think that's also why our president is going to be there in South Africa. She's meeting Ramaphosa. Guess what, Hamoud? It also includes one of the aquatic border areas.
Oh.
You remember?
12 pages of all protocol observed.
Yeah, the very vague and highly, not secretive, but elusive discussion that took place 2 years back in Walvis Bay, which we couldn't understand. Okay, so what did you actually discuss about the Orange River? But that's also another thing we can park that bus somewhere else.
Yes.
So, looking at Namibia having to then ramp up its ability to host something bigger, this thing starts telling on what we can invest in locally. I mean, that's why I keep, I will continue hammering on local authorities. I will continue hammering on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because local authorities have to start playing their role in alleviating the continuous performance mechanism that Windhoek has to do. But Windhoek supports through funding. They support so many other local authorities. Now, if a local business community person in that community, Uncle Bona asked the question yesterday, what are Namibians doing? Well, here's the thing. One answer, looking at it in hindsight in today's conversation, is let's, for example, say someone decides to open up an actual hotel in Otjiwarongo. Or someone decides to open up an actual hotel or a Holiday Inn. Sorry for using a company's name. But an inn is an actual kind of a mini hotel. You get a hotel, you get an inn, and then you get a bed and breakfast or a pension and a guest house. A guest house is the smallest one that you can get. Because backpackers and pensions and guest houses are literally on the same level, and then bed and breakfasts are like the lowest. But we don't have backpackers, Hamoud. Backpackers help with the what we call in like basic business terminology, rats and mice business. Do you know what rats and mice are? Rats and mice, Hamoud, is if you look at a shop, like a retail shop.
Yeah.
A rats and mice is the person that comes and buys the milk and the bread. Every day. That's all they buy.
for like 5 days in the week. A loaf of bread, a liter of milk. A loaf of bread, a liter of milk.
I've seen the prices of the hardware. Camping and backpacking. let me just say camping hardware.
Yeah.
Holy cow, the prices are holy cow.
But you know what? How many times the farmers go and buy at those retail outlets, those camping, those outdoor retail shops.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the clothing.
Yeah.
I'm talking about things like camping chairs. You don't know how people steal camping chairs from each other.
Oh, and camping chairs and tents is one of those things that's being bought by a lot of people I know. Exactly. Yeah, especially you know, especially for the December holidays.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, it's camping chairs and tents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's big business. If you're in the outdoors retail space,
yeah,
it's big business. Cooler boxes is another commodity.
Yeah.
Cooler boxes is like a gold mine. You don't know how people steal cool boxes from each other, Helmut.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, I was given a
cooler box.
A cooler box. It's basically a backpack. It's slash cooler box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more for picnics. So if you and one it of was your stolen. Other, it was stolen.
Yeah.
Okay. You have a good idea, Hune.
I know very well. Okay. I just know.
You don't want to mention names.
I don't want to mention any names.
Just we know who you are, even though I don't know who you are.
Yeah, look, I just halfway through, I just you know, realized it's just, you know what, it's not worth the trouble. Plus, yeah. I just didn't want unnecessary noise. Yeah, I just decided, you know what, well, it's okay. But the thing is,
so you gave it away. Okay, with that face, Helmut, it's a no.
It's a no. Okay. Like I said, it was like my, you know, like my high school English teacher will put it. It was bought without money.
You should have said it was repossessed.
It was bought without money.
It found new ownership.
It's a very beautiful, and it's a waterproof inside. So because it's made for, you know, for liquids, you know,
for putting ice in.
Yeah. That's when, you know, that's basically the first thing that came in my head when you said, cooler box, you know, get stolen. I was like, oh, been there, done that.
No, it's big business. Now, that's not rats and mice business that I'm talking about.
Hmm.
Rats and mice is, when you look at like in the tourism sector now, this would be someone coming and buying one beer, a Coke. They need to sleep over for one night. You know, they just need to have some sort of self-serve with a bed that they can sleep on for like 5 days, pay a minimum fee. We really need to invest more, Helmut, in that bracket of tourism. Namibia is known as a tourism destination for families. So we're talking about 4 or 5 people, 6, 9, 10 people coming at one stage for the same trip.
Again, when was that? January, yeah. Was that, beginning of February 2019. Mm. Mm. I saw a convoy of, tourists. They seem to be Chinese.
Mm.
This was a convoy for about 25 to 27 cars.
Yeah. Yeah. Helmut. It's doable. And then you've got the South Africans.
Yeah. I think it's one of those, group travel. And it's also done by, there are a lot of people that I know that also do that. Like in the beginning, from the beginning of the year, they would just, come together and start putting money together, so that in December they can go to say, Victoria Falls or Etosha, wherever it is, you know, they choose. But, it becomes a group thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think, you know, it's a very good initiative when you think of it, because I think, you know, it's us thinking outside the box that, you know what, I can't afford to do this alone, but I want to do it. And then, I want to do this. So if you want to do it, mm-hmm. then we can just, open an account and, you know, and put money together. And the next thing, you know, there are 5 of you that have, you know, that have come to that agreement of, okay, now, where do we want to go in December? What type of activities we're going to do? Let's calculate everything from, travels. Take, for example, if we are going to rent a car or if we're going to take one that is, or two that are owned by already members of the group. and how do we contribute to the servicing, the fueling, all these things. And then you calculate all that and then just split to see how much you're going to need at the end of the year by the time that the date that you're planning this vacation is going to come.
Yeah.
And then you just decide, okay, now for this amount, how much do we need to contribute per year, per month each? Done.
You're done, yeah. It's a wonderful idea as well, Hamoud, but South Africa for Namibia, for Namibians, is also like, how do I put this? It's like a that destination. Mm-hmm. It's on the level like a Europe.
Yeah.
Hence the reason why I showed you the most cost effective way was rather pay for the, you know, to travel by road.
Yeah.
Or by coach or by train if it comes about. When it tries to come about. The dimension from that is South Africa has, they've got a tricky tourism sector for us Africans. Specifically, if they know you're a Namibian, shorter, you are most welcome. Absolutely, most welcome. But if you're another African in South Africa as a tourist, it gets tricky.
Becomes a match.
Not really so. I mean, if you now try to be like an everyday tourist, let's say they're in Cape Town, walking there on the pavement, it'll be the same experience as like for tourists when they are here in Namibia, here in Windhoek, here in the middle of town, here in the middle of Windhoek as well, the interactions and stuff like that. But then, you know that you are African, but you are treated on the same level specifically like a European. I when I was there turning 11, I met an Irish couple who've been living in Cape Town, and they've been doing the gig economy already in 2011 by living in Cape Town.
Yeah.
And this guy was so bragging about how many times he's traveled wherever, he and his girlfriend, wherever in the world. And the way I met them was through this guy that who said he's Scottish, but he speaks French. And I just sit there looking at him like, brah, please. Let us not start with the stories. Please, how can you be Scottish and you speak French?
I mean,
well, it's plausible.
That's what I was about to say. Well, it's not impossible.
But his English, ne, is more rah-rah-rah.
Oh, no. Nah.
So I asked him straightforward, listen, just tell me if you're French or not. Just say you are French. I don't know whether Scottish. He said, no, but my mom and my brothers live in Scotland. And I said, are you sure? Because you don't sound Scottish. You know, you really don't. But anyway, that's another discussion. So at the heart of that scene in 2011 were backpackings, were backpacker installations in Long Street. If you go today, Helmut, to Cape Town, Long Street literally means Langstraat. I don't know, the South Africans, you know, back then when they were naming streets, you get Plainstraat, Longstraat. What's the other ones? What's the other street's name that runs parallel? Up, it runs to Lion's Head, directly to the mountain, from the bay to the mountain, or from the train station to the mountain. Now, Long Street, it's just because it's a long street.
Literally.
It's definitely not, it's not longer than Independence. Independence still beats it. Independence is pretty long. we'll be honest, Independence is pretty long.
It is long.
Yeah, but it was named that way because obviously town planning back then. Now, the thing with that street of Long Street is, as you approach the mountain, because you'll see the mountain in front of you, as you walk to the mountain, from the start of Long Street where it bridges onto, what's that street's name? The one that runs right past the train station. Kaiser. Anyway, because it's in Dutch. That's the word. It's not even in German. It's in Dutch. That's the worst part. That and the street name. So, if you walk from that street corner upwards towards the mountain, you start seeing more and more backpackers. Now, the backpackers were concentrated, Helmut, because they made that street the party scene.
Mm.
Now, that's also not what Namibia has. That's also what Namibia does not have. Now, the appeal that I'm sharing here is that just like with the cultural and the creative sectors, this is one of the low-hanging fruits. Now, yes, Namibia Tourism Board is now obviously trying to, swing its proverbial sort of like mace of authority or sword of authority. But the discussion that we need is we don't need more Airbnbs. We don't. We need more backpackers. Backpackers attract young tourists. They create jobs for young Namibians. And this will be like a youth-to-youth cultural interaction exchange program.
Mm-hmm.
It'll encourage more tourism throughout the rest of the country. So who destinations that would need backpackers? Places like Kietmans on the way to Lüderitz, Henties Bay, Walvis Bay, Swakop, Windhoek. Maybe Otjiwarongo. If you go to the north, but that's where the north has to really also define itself through investment into its own infrastructure. If you go to Rundu definitely needs more backpackers.
You know, now that you brought up the tourism in the northern part of the country, it's one of those things that is sort of like, let me just use the word recommend as a good business startup idea for someone that wants to start a business in Namibia. One of the hanging fruit as in a good place to start or a good business venture to dive into as a beginner, a business individual in Namibia would be the tourism industry. Yeah. And that is a recommendation that Robin Sheban provides in his Guide to the Namibian Economy.
Yeah.
One thing the Guide to Namibian Economy looks at is that if you look at most of the tourist installations, they are privately / family owned.
Definitely is.
And that means, compared to the extractive industry, I believe, which is very, you don't have to be a mathematician to know that, compared to businesses like the extractive industry, it's much easier to start a business as someone that to participate in the tourism industry than in the extractive industry, because the extractive industry is not only heavily regulated and strictly regulated, but it's also ridiculously expensive to participate in.
Mm.
And we have, the same book basically explains, gives you a rough estimate of how much one seismic survey costs you in the extractive industry. And like, you know what? With that amount of money, I can build a whole lodge.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that you see in that is also somewhat very interesting. Just right next to, interesting enough, conservancies in the northern part of the country is traditional living museums. Yeah. You have living museums. For a lot of people that are interested into seeing the cultural aspect of Namibian tribes, they don't want to sit in Windhoek.
Exactly. And that's the thing that I've also been against. This centralization in Windhoek every time. Look, you can have a body based in Otjiwarongo. You can have a body based in Tsumeb.
Yeah.
You can have an organization based or whatever based in Gobabis. But people love this idea of Windhoek bright lights, the big city, the way to go. Yes, it's all I'm hearing is just expensive. That's all I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So people also have to think outside of, where do you host things? Go do a little bit of research. Okay, the research technically is already done for you by the NSA. I'm not tooting their horn. but the research is done for you already. You just have to go look at where the trends are moving. Because it really doesn't make sense for you to now go to Swakop, Helmut, to try and open up a backpackers in Swakop. Ne?
Yeah.
And the Swakop community doesn't want you to sell beer after 10 o'clock at night. It really doesn't make sense. And I'm also trying to understand that kind of community negative economic feature. One of the biggest issues for Swakop was that young people, No? And this is from 2003 heading up to 2015. It's one of the reasons why I don't like Swakop. Swakop's actual facade, Helmut, is a retirement village. No, really. Swakop's actual image, ne, for any Namibian, if they think about it, is a retirement village, or you must be a family person with young children, or with, or you are going to, you are moving with your wife or your husband there to Swakop or to Walvis because you found a job there and the conditions are just right for you to start your family there. Swakop is not cosmopolitan. Swakop is not a cutting edge urban lifestyle. Swakop is not even.
It has an ocean.
Helmut, Swakop is not even at the forefront of cultural identity even. That's the worst part of this place. And if you're from Swakop, guys, I don't care. I'm on record here. I don't like your town.
I know he already said that he doesn't care and he's on record, but I just would like to point it up again. That was Dwight.
Yeah, I don't like your town because your town is not youth-friendly. Swakop is not youth-friendly, Helmut. I'll tell you today. Swakop is not youth friendly. Walvis is not youth friendly.
In terms of the environment itself or the prices that it costs to live in.
No. If you're looking at tourism there.
Yeah.
What does tourism actually encapsulate? Tourism encapsulates fun. Fun in the sun, fun in the sand, fun in the sea, fun on the beach.
Swakop has all of those.
Yeah, but those are things that are naturally there.
Mm-hmm.
But now you need to round out those activities for the visitors. You need to have bars that are open, a nightclub, a this, a that, a this. And when you get to Swakop,
mm-hmm.
you've got a quiet bar that closes at 10 o'clock at night here around the corner. You have to walk on the other side of the street of the town to go find a shabin that decides to be open. And then you have to go to which other part of the town. Everything is away from the center of town. The center of town is supposed to be your economic activity. Not the outskirts of town. Not you are pushing people away just to go find a beer, to see what nightlife looks like. And the moment the sun goes down, we do a post office worker situation in Namibia. Poof, everyone is at home.
Yeah, I don't leave the house very much. The whole time that I was in Arandis, Swakop, Walvis, Swakop, Walvis, but all the time during the day.
Exactly.
So I don't know a thing about nightlife. But one thing is, we had two shows when we were doing Sounds of Nam. I didn't attend any of those, but, yeah. They did seem to have a lot of good time.
Yeah.
Cause, I basically had to edit, I was editing all the videos and compiling everything into, all the videos and pictures into a video and pictorial report for, for sponsors.
Mm.
Yeah. They did take a lot of, fun looking, nightlife and the DJ. Jesus, the DJ. But the thing is, the DJ was there very busy.
You guys have seen this. I mean, why did you show that? Why did you do that gesture with your hands?
Thank God. Anyway,
you're not on the stream when you made that, no? That gesture.
No.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, that's good. So it's me the whole time.
God is good all the time.
Yeah.
Before I went to Omaheke, I was in Thonjupa.
Mm.
And this is, Ocho Thonjupa, we're talking about deep in Tsumkwe. So, this is,
that's our eastwards, closer to Gam.
Closer to Gam.
Yeah.
Now this is a place that only has one service station. That's one. And the thing is, sometimes you have this whole convoy of this whole convoy of travelers that are fueling up, coming from Grootfontein, they will just fuel up and head due north through security, because that road from Tsungwe, it goes through security into, strip, I think up to, up to Ndiona. That's where you get in the road, into the B1 road that goes to Zambezi, Difumu and Zambezi. Now, the thing is, it's and there's also a living museum. And one thing that island is that at least from the type of tourists that I was exposed to back in Tsumkwe, both in Tsumkwe and at Arnas, is that a lot of the people that I met that are tourists, a lot of them are from Belgium, France, Germany, and all. Now these guys were more interested, at least to see an aspect of the culture.
Yeah.
Of the people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And which I found fascinating. Now it was more, a cultural thing for most of the people that I met in Tsumkwe.
Mm.
And it was more for like wildlife sightseeing type of thing for the people that I met at Arnas.
Mm.
And so that's when I realized that, okay, if you look at, is that Malaysia where you get, where's Bali?
Bali is Malaysia, I think.
Yeah.
Bali is Malaysia. Yeah.
Yeah. Now
it's either Malaysia or Indonesia. Yeah. One of the two.
Now they have something they call, what's this? Trevor Noah made a whole set on it. This Balinese experience. Yeah. It's just about giving you this immersive type of experience into the culture and tradition and way of life of the people. In that, of the people in that environment. I think that's what all, I think that's what.
Indonesia.
It's Indonesia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what, living museums tries to that's the type of experience that living museums tries to give or more like, gives tourists. That, you are in Namibia. But if you go to a living museum in Tsumkwe, for example, you'll be exposed to a lot of historical and traditional aspects of not just the Khoisan people, but Namibia as a whole.
Hamoud, if you try to fly from Namibia to Bali right now, or 31 July to 4 August, because you will fly for 1 day and 4 hours because of the stopovers.
How many stopovers are you looking at?
That depends on which one. Lowest price you can guess to be priced for a return ticket, round trip, 31,000. Highest potentially might be 57,000. Yeah, for a Namibian, don't go to Bali. For a Namibian, you can go to Europe.
Point of correction. For a Namibian who can afford an iPhone with 2 SIM cards, as long as you are not arrested yet, you can go to Bali.
We're no Navy.
Look, we live, it's inclusivity in Namibia.
You can fly to Frankfurt, Helmut, for 10 hours and 10 minutes from Windhoek. Guess at what price?
10,000?
Okay, just add 3 more thousand.
13,000?
Yeah. Round trip. Go there and
round
back.
Round trip?
Yeah.
Jeez.
And that's...
Now, Ghana...
Okay.
Oh boy, internal flights.
Dude, let's look at Ghana.
Oh man,
what's Ghana's capital? Accra.
Accra, yeah.
Accra, Ghana.
It's already sounding sad.
let's see if there are flights, because it first has to restart. Wow, but it's a 16-hour flight. From 30 July to what's the date? What's my date? 30 July. Yeah, from 30 July to 5 August, the cheapest flight is 15,000. But I'm flying for 16 hours. But to Frankfurt, it's 10 hours.
For?
Accra is closer. More expensive. Germany is further. Cheaper.
So the more expensive and is I because fly of quicker. The stopovers.
But it doesn't say here's a stopover.
Yeah, there is one stopover. Addis Ababa. I'm first flying east to fly west. But that's not the concern here about where this air connectivity element is also going.
Yeah.
The air connectivity is working in the favor, for example, of certain countries like South Africa and Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa, for certain flights, they will take, you will fly all the way to Johannesburg. You'll fly past Namibia, Helmut.
Okay, okay.
You land in Johannesburg, and I must stop over as a Namibian in Joburg for Vanduk. That's what happened with us Namibians in 2024 coming back from Russia. We had to stop over in Joburg. And our stop over there was more than 10 hours in Joburg.
Eesh.
Because our flight the next morning was like 8 a.m., 9 a.m. with South African Airways coming back this way. So you are flying past my country all the way to Johannesburg. Just to tell me
flying past my country.
Just to go chill there.
Why didn't he just tell him, pilot, just hear me parachute.
Because it's window. Emirates. Do you think they will listen to you as a Namibian? They'll even go like, you are from where?
You know, just say, Assalamu alaikum, my brother. Just give me a parachute, I'll jump.
You are from where? Zimbabwe. From where? Namibia. But yeah, so that's the reality. This is just commercial activity. The next one, which is also a stopover in Addis Ababa, but it adds another stop to this, but it pushes your price from 15,000 to 26,000. That's to Accra. This is to Accra, to Ghana. Do you see the intentional. The intentional business case that is literally the hurdle that doesn't make AFCFTA gel.
But is it intentional though? If you are operating a commercial flight company, and you don't have a lot of people flying in between different African countries.
But that's not what I'm saying, Ahmed. Remember. The other time, at the start of this year, when I said, we don't have to look at jet engines as transport. They are propeller engines.
You just complained about the one in Russia. You want us to adopt one?
Yeah. Helmut, those airplanes exist, but for some reason,
yeah.
When you look at like continental flights, the continental reality can happen.
Yeah.
But for some reason, people are thinking about, when I start an airline, it has to be fully just jumbo jets,
yeah.
I must fill up 200 seats, 300 seats, I must have, it's go big and go home, it's go big or go home mentality,
thing, yeah.
Which is the wrong business mentality to have, because business mentality is based upon, do you have the data? Do you understand do you have the current data about what you're trying to do? And are you going to be able to gradually achieve your goals to become a fixture in this economy? Because here's the thing, Amun. Business is not about like the mentality that entrepreneurs are most like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to eat.
Yeah.
The actual economy is not about I'm here to eat. The actual economy is about I want to do this long term. I don't want anyone else to be my boss. I want to be my own boss. We are doing this for the long run. The most successful companies. Remember that thing I told you last year? When you look at the biggest companies in the world,
yeah.
Are all family companies.
Yeah.
Are all family businesses.
Yep.
Even in Namibia. Namibia's most resilient, strongest, biggest, and healthiest businesses in this economy are all family owned.
Yeah.
So, in the reality of things, in, you know, looking at the reality on the ground, wherever it is, we have to identify, for example, are Namibians out there serious with business or not? Now, this gets us away from the conversation of like yesterday where, you know, looking at the agriculture side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Amut, it's with agriculture, you know, there's always a market. People will always eat. People are hungry. They are organic organisms. They need food. But here's the thing. At the heart of the agricultural discussion is a discussion of, are you in it for the long run, or are you going to treat this like a classroom pet project situation? Because with tourism, it's the same question, the same mentality that you've got to approach. Are you going to do this for the long run? Are you going to be here forever? There's a hotel in Tsumeb that exists since Namibia's colonial era.
Mm.
That's how old that hotel is. That hotel is family owned. That shows you how long, how old that family, and how old that family has been since their first ancestor came here on a boat, Khutasa, when Tsumeb was like the mining hub in the colonial period of Namibia. That hotel still stands, Howard. But that hotel was the new, main attraction outside Tsumeb. I think you know which one I'm talking about. The one with the water park. That lovely one, as you come into the Tsumeb from, you know, you're northbound, but you're coming from Otjiwarongo, coming in. You've been to Tsumeb, ne?
No.
Okay. So when you enter Tsumeb from a southern direction,
yeah,
from Otjiwarongo, when you enter Tsumeb, there's a major tourism feature here on your right. It's think of it like it's a slash I don't know what it is, because it's not a hotel, but it's got accommodation, it's got a water park feature, it's got entertainment features, it's got like restaurant features. I just don't want to mention its name, not to give it a, but it's right here as you enter the town. And then that 100-year-old hotel I'm talking about is standing in the middle of the town. Now, that time when I was there in Tsumeb in 2016, I walked through the town to just check the lay of, to see the lay of the land, see what's, you know, what, where the beat is where the beat is at. And they had just opened up that mall, as you follow the main road into Tsumeb, they just opened that mall, which is on the main road that enters, and the town is a damn beautiful town. There's no town that comes close to Tsumeb. Yes, I'm tooting Tsumeb's horn here, but Tsumeb has a lot more work that they know themselves they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Tsumeb was strategic in its tourism investment program, they would have invited potentially more investors to say, hey, listen, please come and open up more tourism elements. And then they've got to do the necessary to try and associate more tourism activity close to them. But it's a balance, because there are certain things that you can control as a council, as a town council, or as a municipal council, because it's a municipality. And there are certain things that your investor controls. Now, if your investor doesn't like the direction of your municipal council, then you are caught in between the hard rock and the other hard rock places and the solid places in some scenarios, because then there's an impasse. What do we do? Here in Windhoek, you know, the municipal council here is, you know, they're potentially, you know, do what you must with tourism. Just comply with the regulations. Now, I don't know how heavy regulations are in other parts of the country, but I know it's heavy in Windhoek. It is heavy in Windhoek. It's Social Security compliance. It's Ministry of Finance compliance. It's, what's the other one? City of Windhoek compliance. It's health and safety, which is City of Windhoek once again. It's, what's the food inspectors? City of Windhoek once again. Then there is, if you're dealing with certain things, there's another ministry that's involved. Ministry of Health, for example. So there's so many compliance things that you've got to meet in Windhoek alone. But if you find yourself 60 Ks in Okahandja, 90 Ks in Rehoboth, I'm not saying go there to bend the rules, guys. But I will just say compliance is not at the forefront of the investment discussion.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Look, the reason why I think the first thing that comes in my head every time we talk about tourism, the first thing that comes in my head is for me, it's always it will always will be what will Namibia offer that is unique to other destinations?
Yeah,
Yeah, because you can look at it. You can look at it even from a trade perspective. Like the president just, you know, the president's trip to China is one of those the trips that will, you know, get me asking. Okay, we have a diplomatic and economic relationship, a relationship with China. China is, you know, is an industrial, you know, is an industrial monster.
Yeah.
Now, what are we going to produce that we are going to trade with the Chinese that is not part of the extractive sector?
Tourism is at the forefront of them.
There you go.
But it's if you can attract and if you do have
marketing. The attracting part.
Yeah, because you've got a market, Namibia, in China.
You see, that part is an interesting part. Now, when you look at that's what brings me to the question of what is it that Namibia have that is unique to other tourist destinations? Because the both the reports that we went through in May and this one that is more of a not as elaborate as the one that we went through in May, is more like a summarized version basically. But here's the thing, I have now one homeboy who, you know, with she's a German Namibian, but she spent a lot of time in Germany.
I thought you said homeboy.
No, that's the girlfriend. Yeah. Now, you know what happened?
Yeah.
She came to Namibia. Homeboy just took his. She wanted to go to the village and have this whole type of village experience.
Mm.
Yeah. She came back telling all stories that made everyone look at her and go like, okay.
You do know that's.
You know, this is one of the stories she was telling. You know what? Well, it was very beautiful. We had dinner under the stars. And in my head, I'm like, so she's talking about the village. So, yeah, dinner under the stars. That's my entire childhood.
But do you know that in some places in Europe, Hamid, the people don't see starlight?
Exactly.
They don't have a night sky.
Urbanization comes with a lot of light pollution.
Exactly.
And because of that, they don't get to enjoy the view of the night sky in the same way that we do.
Yes.
And that is, the funny story is, I think that was New York or California, one of these two, in 1994.
Mm.
They had an earthquake that was so severe, it knocked off the power grid. And for the first time in a very long time, they had this large-scale blackout that enabled, that was around 3 o'clock in the morning. So people looked in the in the sky for the first time. A lot of people that's when they saw this unpolluted with light night sky, with all the light in the sky at night.
Yeah.
Adults called the police
because they thought it was space,
an alien invasion.
We're known it.
But. So for me, I think in the very same way that I may have the this whole I may have the feeling of I have to visit this urban area. You know, I want to see Dubai, I want to see Doha, I want to see Tokyo. All these are giant metropolis. Now, but most people that have been born and raised in this area, they want to see my village.
Mm.
So when someone, for example, leaves places like Tokyo, for example, and they come to Windhoek, and they want to have, a dark night sky for more natural experience, nightlife, not a groove type of nightlife, because last time I checked, every urban area across the planet has one of those.
Now, but we need more of that.
We need more of that. But I think this is where your urban, not your urban. I think this is where your living museum now comes in.
Mm.
Yeah, because if you want to get a taste of traditional food or traditional music or basically everything traditional, this will be your go-to places. There's one guy. I'm not sure where he was from, but he did produce a whole song with the Khoisan people. I think that was at Grasshoek, on your way to Tsumkwe.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a very it's a very beautiful song. Yeah, The whole song is, the whole video of the song features a lot of, you know, like animal trekking at night and, you know, a traditional dance in the evening. So all this is not just showcasing the culture. It's, I think it's normal for human beings that something that you are not exposed to, you find interesting and exotic.
Mm.
So we may look at our culture and look at and consider it boring, but for someone who is not exposed to it, they find it fascinating in the very same way that you and I will find ourselves fascinated by their culture. So basically, for the most part, if you ask me, tourism is based around something that is exotic. As long as it's not food, because I looked at this type of I think that was some parts of Asia where they make soup out of bed nests, and that bed makes its nest with its saliva. Must be delicious. Yeah. And they said,
I think there's someone right now not contemplating dinner tonight because of that, Helmut.
minus me. I mean, I've been I've gone through breakups, and my appetite was still up and running. I was like, you know what, heartbreak. Off we go to the kitchen, buddy. We don't have time for this.
If you're hungry, you're hungry.
If you're hungry, you're hungry, buddy. Well, she left, but you gotta eat.
Yeah.
So. And there's a type of there's also a type of a dish in parts of the Philippines, I believe, where they take duck eggs, and then boil them when they are about to hatch. Call it culture shock, but well, if you were born in that part of the world, you'd look at that and go, delicious.
Yeah.
But because I wasn't exposed to that culture, I watched that video and started going, yeah.
Why?
Yeah. You know what? I'll just keep boiling them when they are nowhere near hatching. Turns out it's delicious. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll just, delicious it at a distance.
Hmm.
Yeah. So if you look at it, then tourism goes beyond, goes beyond just the sightseeing. It's about experience, and I think for much of the tourist institutions, or more like facilities, are used by conference halls, especially hospitality institutions. They have conference halls. That means you are talking fun and work into one environment.
Mm. Okay, the
work trip. Huh.
Okay, the discussion, Helmut, also about what we envisage to see
in Namibia.
Yeah, in Namibia is obviously something between a desired outcome versus a current situation template. A desired outcome obviously speaks also to, in the hope that we see this in the short term. What I'm now going to describe is not going to be in a calendar year, 3 months, 6 months. Short term would be in the next 3 years. We see a slight increase, a slight gradual adoption of or consumption of a service or of a particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
What we also need to identify as should I say we as consumers or we as Namibians? Okay, let me rather keep it as us as consumers, because everyone can consume tourism. Is how often can you maintain this activity? Because tourism also has a weird thing where something is in trend or is a hot trend, mm-hmm. and then it falls out of being a hot trend. For example, let's look at Bali. Namun, Bali or Southeast Asia, if I now have to use discriminatory language right now, Bali, mm-hmm. Southeast Asia is for a cheap tourist.
Mm-hmm.
This is a tourist that doesn't need a backpack. They just need a passport, a mobile phone, money on a bank card, maybe some money in the wallet,
and
have the ticket, and then they fly. Because you will come back with clothes. All you need to do is just take your toothbrush with that side.
Because they are major textile manufacturers.
Everything is cheap.
Yeah.
I had a sales manager that did that with me once when I actually started working. Homeboy told me, Dwight, you must go to... Now, he'd been to Thailand. He'd been to... What did he go to? Bali. But he loved Thailand a lot. Shan't expand into why. But he loved Thailand a lot. But there's obviously also the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, in close proximity. And then he says, Dwight.
I'll keep my comments now, myself. Remember,
this is 2009. He says, Dwight, dude, you can buy 100% leather, genuine leather products. Left, right, and center. You can buy them for like 50 bucks. You can buy like 6 of the things.
Is it $6 Namibian or US?
Namibian.
Jeez.
Like $6. You know, for a pair of sandals for you to walk around there. You don't need anything expensive. Shirts, shorties. He says all he does is he flies with an empty bag that way. with just his toothbrush. And he flies with a backpack, like this regular backpacks.
Yeah.
The small one, you know, that you just keep a few stuff in.
Yeah.
He flies with that. And then he flies back with a suitcase.
Holy cow.
And then he's there for 5-10 days, ne?
Yeah.
Then he's there. And then I said, they're looking, I said, this boss of mine's name was Greg. And I said, Greg, how was it? He says, Dwight, it was outstanding. Now, what he would do, he would buy these tourism packages. He would pay his money, ne?
Mm-hmm.
Just to get there. And then the tourism package tells you, we are going on these designated routes.
Yeah.
Then what he does is, when he lands, he sees day one. Okay, so this is how you're going to treat us. And then he bounces here.
So he takes his own tour.
He takes his own tour. He hires a cabbie. And then he just goes and explores, wherever they are landing.
Yeah.
So, he did it twice because he left that company the next year in 2010. He left in 2010. But he did it twice. And it's also from him, and like with my elder brother as well, that I saw that don't be fixated on the large tourism destinations. Helmut, you can just also take a backpack, ne? And then you can go here to Tanzania. And you can go to Kenya. Yes. You will have to imagine that your behind still has a feeling because of the bus ride. Because there's a possibility that you might forget any feeling. What it last felt like. Because of the bus rides. I mean, roads probably have improved somewhere between Zambia or Zimbabwe and Tanzania and Kenya. But the possibility is there. Look, yeah. If you want an adventure, sometimes, you know, it's nice to have the adventure. But
by that you mean it's nice to take risks?
No, it's not a risk. It's probably just driving with a guy who imagines he's Bob Jones spanner is a steering wheel situation. Those are not risks. Those are just calculated, you know, adventures. But
make sure your suitcase is waterproof. Been there. Look, man, I don't mean to throw shades, but I found myself in 2017.
Yeah.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just keep my eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapogwa eva tere urikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihoetike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu kwanda doi nawa nune udo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngeje pa omarudi dayo loka okone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Welcome back. We continue. So my also slight apologies to my my Zambian my Zambian brothers. I found myself in 2017 on a road from Sisheke to Monze. Yeah.
Whatever.
No, look, from Livingstone all the way, from Livingstone all the way to Monze. No, that was a perfect ride. But from Monze to somewhere near Livingstone, Jesus, that road was, I don't know, but I think it was only, how am I kidding? I don't think it was ever renovated. And, you know, their potholes and then their Fish River and Grand Canyons. Now, that road had the latter, not the former. Now, and you are on a bus, so that you are just looking at the driver and going. the only smooth ride I remember is from Livingstone all the way to Monza. Now that was just beautiful.
Yeah,
but met some nice people, very nice drinking people. And the food is wonderful. Mm. I mean, I had a wonderful time. So, when you look at it, take for example from an African perspective, in terms of not just the consumption of the product associated with the tourism industry, but products and services associated with the tourism industry, but in terms of participating, every time I think of it from a participating standpoint, I remember. Was that you that told me the story of this part of the, is it the Brandberg Mountain, where one aspect, one part that seems to be part of a, falls into a private farm has some booming tourism aspect to it.
No, it's the example, remember, of the rock paint, the rock art.
The rock art.
It's the Ronga Mountain. So.
Yeah.
Let's say 3/4 of the Ronga Mountains are spread over private farmland.
Mm-hmm.
But these private farms now have lodges.
Yeah.
So they've got a majority of the rock art caves, the caves that host the rock art.
Yeah. Right?
And the people that they hire, like tour guides and stuff, come from other parts of the country.
Yeah.
So that's obviously the participation. Now, there's a minority presence of the rock art also close to Uis in the constituency, which is in the Rongo region side, like on communal land.
Yeah.
Just on the other side of the mountains.
Yeah.
And that's most the guy that's struggling, the tour guide that side from the local community, who's struggling basically to promote his tourism activity,
mm-hmm.
get more visitors to come and also see the rock art positioned there.
On his side.
On his side, yeah. in a communal area. And it's problematic because It's the same thing that I keep saying about if you've experienced Windhoek, would you want to go live anywhere else in this country? And then many people will say, no, I don't see three malls in any other place of this country. Exactly. I don't get to experience the true nightlife. Exactly. I don't get to enjoy certain particular things here in Windhoek, in other parts of the country. Exactly. That's the unfortunate thing that Windhoek has.
So we move to urban areas and we are accustomed to the comfort and the conveniences of urban areas. We can't imagine living anywhere else.
Yeah. And here's the other thing in that analysis, Ahmed, is that you sometimes also see who the tourism sector is geared towards.
Yeah.
It's not meant for us Namibians. We have to be honest.
Yeah, I have seen the prices.
It's not just about the prices. The customer to be attracted. Helmut, ever since I've got now my scooter and situation, since the start of this year, And since City of Windhoek made their municipal museum like prominent, because they launched it, I think, start of this year or end of last year, I really want to just go, take like 2 hours as an experiment and go and see what I as a Namibian will learn from this museum. Museums are there, Helmut.
Yeah.
Technically for the population of that settlement, of that country, of that nation, because it helps to solidify an identity of the country.
Yeah.
But museums in Namibia are geared towards tourists. They geared towards tourists. Now, if you as a Windhoeker want to go and see a museum here in Namibia, your only time you have from your busy schedule from working is Saturdays and Sundays. And then those...
Aren't they close?
Yes. Those officials then go and have weekends because they 8 to 5 and they post office work the living lights out of a situation.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have time during the week. You see Windhoek every day. You would like to have a different perspective. It's these kinds of things that ultimately, it doesn't get the buy-in from the local population. It doesn't get the buy-in of us Namibians on a daily basis. Now, from a young age, I've also gone to museums. But in some cases, you can see where curatorship, tourism, the how to populate a tourist, to how to populate a museum is another discussion. Helmut.
Just don't do it the British way.
Definitely. But it is exactly the British, American, European template that has got me fixated on history. Where did my actual love for history begin? Not just with the encyclopedias that my parents had accumulated for us to learn, to build up our, not just general knowledge, but our reading skills as well. But also, that one activity when my sister took us to the Rehoboth Museum, when we still stayed in Rehoboth back in the 90s. And we went there. And since I'm someone that observes people's body language, you walk into that museum, Helmut, and it's literally the size of the studio of ours. There's a wagon you saw, there's a this, that, there's a photo there, there's a that, and then, poof, presentation is klaar. You go like, this is the history?
Yeah.
This is all you have?
Yep.
Now, scenarios, for example, like that, City of Windhoek Museum here on the Robert Mugabe, right across Windhoek High School. It's a house. It's as big as our front office building. It's a house. You really want to tell me that almost 200 years of history of Windhoek can fit in the size of a house?
Yeah, that's because much of the history is loaded with stealing and pillaging.
History is history, Hamoud. It happened already.
Yeah.
Hence the reason why
you... And I like how you find that right next to the Independence Museum.
Well, that one too.
Yeah.
And it's a discussion of like, that 300 meters that includes Windhoek High School is a historic like 300 meter scenario. It's from that old church at the top, actually extended to the Parliament building.
Yeah.
The Parliament building was the old colonial house, the governor's house, the Tintin Palace, the Pink Palace.
Yes.
It's the governor, it's where Lloyd Vine and what's the guy? Von Trotta them stayed. It's there. It's the administrative building. So from there, let's say from the old state house, which is also technically a historic building, from there, to that City of Windhoek municipal, that City of Windhoek museum, just with Robert Mugabe, you just walk. If you walk from this four-way where City of Windhoek and Bank of Namibia, not City of Windhoek, where Bank of Namibia and Windhoek High School are, across the street you find that City of Windhoek museum, and you walk to the church, to the Parliament Gardens direction. That is a historic 200 meters of Namibia. On that,
just that part.
Just that, it's a super historic, installation there. Because the fort, which was the old museum, National Museum, is the oldest colonial building, should I rather say. I'll put it like that. Because there are historical facts of what is the actual first building, like built structure by a human. And then you can assume, okay, now we really need to interrogate the word or the phrase oldest building. So I'd put the fort as the oldest colonial building.
Yeah.
Built by colonial settlers that still stands. Because it seems it's on par. No, in Windhoek. Yeah, it's Windhoek's oldest building, sorry. It's Windhoek's oldest building, but I just don't know what happened to Jan Jonker's farmhouse. This Windhoek was Jan Jonker's farm. Jan Jonker Afrikaner.
Mm-hmm.
It was his farm. That's why Windhoek is known as Windhoek.
What?
Helmut, did you forget your high school? Did you get your primary school history?
Yeah, I did.
This Windhoek is Jan Jonker's farm.
I know about Jan Jonker, the farm, but...
Hence the reason why I'm asking you about that traditional authority here in Northwoods. Mm. Remember when our colleagues went and were bushwhacking? Remember? Back in 2024? Was it 2024? Yeah, it was 2024.
Yeah, when them and the Ministry of Agriculture got lost.
When they were asking each other for direction. Sorry, guys. It's an internal joke. Yeah. So... That's why I ask you. That's why I'm asking.
This is a problem with technology. I talk about a portion of land you have never even visited.
And people are asking directions from each other. It's a varsity plek. So yeah. Jax, if you're listening, we're sorry.
You gotta love that. We're sorry.
But I was laughing when Jax told us that joke. He was like, are you serious?
So I'm gonna sing it.
No, but here was the funny, you remember the funny part was that they were told, no, it's like 30 kilometers on a gravel road.
Yeah.
And they were driving for 2 hours.
30 kilometers.
That's the funny, I love Namibians when they do that. No, no, it's just close. But then you're driving for 2 hours on a gravel road.
It's just 30 kilometers.
And then it's not even 30 k's. It's not even 30 k's.
You know, there's no way you'll drive a 30 kilometer distance for 2 hours.
No, because they literally drove, from what I could estimate, Helmut, was literally that it was more than 100 k's.
It has to be more than 100 k's.
It has to be more than 100. But yeah, in that scenario, we really need to interrogate the actual history of Helmut, that's where your creative, your historic, your actual tourism starts from.
Yeah.
You start building from a base of, you go look at the street names. Who are the street names in this country? Now, one of the things, which is one of the travesties that I don't like what the politicians are doing, like the local authority politicians, they go and change street names.
They're not supposed to change them.
No, they can. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying don't. Yeah. But firstly, do the history of the city justice.
Yeah.
The history of the city didn't start in 1960. Let's also be factual.
No, it didn't.
It didn't.
Yeah.
So we need to go and understand, okay, where does this history come from? Yes, we've got, and it's one of the reasons also why I love what the Americans do. The Americans and South Africans.
Yeah.
They basically accept there's a colonial history. Mm-hmm. Accept the colonial history. Don't try and rewrite facts. Don't try and change stuff. Accept it. Incorporated
just
in
your... let history be
exactly
and then, said as it was.
Yeah, you tell the story of what was.
Yeah,
and you bring in the other history. You combine your histories to give a complete story.
Yeah.
Not for Dwight to go and read five books about the first civilizations in Southern Africa, how they were basically decimated because of colonial history, and the stories that are not told. Because these are the injustices that happen with people who want to be tourists in their own countries. Hamoud, you will see great value when you realize you can attract people, let's say a Windhoeker like Helmut, to what's that place that I saw last year? That mining town that's older than Namibia, Abanap. You if you go there, Helmut, to realize there was a whole installation of what could have been a town. Underground rail. connecting Tsumeb and Grootfontein. Where have you heard of this, Helmut?
The underground rail. That is some...
Okay, to get the
engineering...
It's an engineering feat. Before 1920. Before 1920. Understanding such particular historical significance. Now, you want to just tell people about where the sand and the sea meet. There's another accusation. If you go look up online about what European tourists are saying about Namibia, about these wide open spaces, but they don't see anything for kilometers. I think that British couple probably told you that as well. Wide open spaces, but they don't see anything. They just see a bush, a tree, a cow, a goat, a donkey, someone's, warthog somewhere, the V16 reverse parking specialists.
Reverse parking master.
That's all they see, and then it's just humans. And then just empty landscape after empty landscape after empty landscape. The view, yes. But then that tourist goes and interrogates, what happened to this view? Now, Helmut, we're at the forefront now.
So they run. So they find a fort. They find an old building. They are curious to know what it was before it was this.
Exactly. And then they only get patchy information. Like how I found it interesting to hear that there was tilapia that swam from Guinas Lake to Lake Oshikoto. Because there was a guy trying to experiment with things because he saw it was just water. And it's one of those settlers that try to have a lovely harebrained idea, and then they throw in a species that's not indigenous, and then the thing populates the whole aquifer up to
and
Lake
it doesn't have a natural predator, so
exactly. So now you technically can go and fish that fish in Lake Guinas.
Yeah.
Or in Oshikoto Lake. The question is just the story behind how that fish got there is the intriguing part. That's the human-to-human connection.
When it comes to things like that, my first question always comes down. Hang on a second. How old are the cave paintings? Like at Brandberg, for example.
What's that? Let's start from the start. There are three installations of super old. You're asking about Brandberg. Like, Irongo Mountains.
Irongo Mountain.
Yeah. Let me quickly just be sure about it because it's a Google search, because it sometimes conflicts, Helmut, with this other academic discussion that's taking place in the world, which Namibians are not part of, which is about where humanity actually began. The South Africans are so far making the best, most convincing argument. You remember Lucy?
Yeah.
The South Africans were the ones that had Lucy.
Yeah.
And then they had, is it Naledi?
There's one
of 2020.
I'm not sure about that, but there's this area where that was discovered. Adam's Calendar?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was found by a pilot by accident in 1994 when a pilot crashed a small plane in that area. So I think in rescuing him, a lot of people realized that there was this unnatural old formation.
Mm.
And after a series of excavations, they realized that this was a thriving civilization on this part. And it's one of the oldest, civilization. And to this day, they can't actually, they say still a debate on what it was. That's why a lot of people call it, Adam's Calendar, in reference to being, it's that old. So it was, some kind of a rock alignment that points into, according to experts, that points into some kind of device being used a long time ago to tell time.
Now, one of the ways that they obviously try to tell time in some cases, Naomut, for example. Okay, so I'm using the Teufelsfontein, which is where you'll find the white lady.
Mm-hmm.
Teufelsfontein is where you'll find the white lady, which is part of that UNESCO site thing.
Yeah.
They state here that Teufelsfontein itself is probably 6,000 years old. Because they have found proof of people living there,
mm-hmm.
potentially 6,000 years ago. Now, there's another cave, Helmut, to the south of Namibia, which is, what's that one's name? I almost said Crocodile Cave. What's that?
Seriously?
What's that cave's name? Apollo Cave, yes. If you search Apollo Cave now, Apollo 11 Cave, or Apollo Cave in Namibia, the rock art there. The rock art there, Helmut, and this is the funny thing now, when you Google search, when you Wikipedia search these various installations, they estimate Apollo to, because it was carbon dated, and it's on a guy's farm. This is some of the travesties that happen in Namibia. Mm. Some of these fascinating, historical, rich in telling the stories of the first human civilizations is on a guy's private farm. Now, yes, the National Heritage Council, they confirmed it. Yeah. They work in conjunction with people like with the Erongo Mountains cave art.
Yeah.
I just told you about Tweefontein, where they've discovered proof that people lived there for 6,000 years back. Ne?
Yeah.
Guess how old is Apollo Cave, Apollo 11 Cave? Just guess.
Older?
Just guess. Give me a number.
10?
No.
Mm-hmm.
30,000 years.
Holy cow.
Now, if you look at the discussions about the first humans, the first humans is literally like a 50 to the 60,000 years ago. Like the proper humans with proper civilizations forming. Remember the older cities discussion we had with the UN Habitat thing?
Yeah.
Where we looked at those two Turkish sites.
Yeah.
Those guys were technically not far off from these Namibians, these Africans.
So the civilizations may have been thriving at around the same time.
But remember, Southern Africa is different. And remember, the continents were closer. The continents were closer. Now, I told you now about, Dragon's Cave. Dragon's Breath, the cave.
Yeah, Dragon's Breath, yeah.
The access point to the aquifer.
Yeah.
Also has rock art in it. It also has rock art in it.
Okay, so just one question, and I'm headed somewhere here. Why is it called the White Lady?
Because of the pigmentation of the one symbol.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that archaeologists look at. They look at what tools did you have.
Yeah.
It's like the living standards measure that we in advertising or in the communication media realm look at. When you look at what kind of listeners are listening to your programming, what kind of readers are reading your magazines and newspapers, and what kind of viewers are watching your TV shows and stuff like that. So you look at where are the decision makers and stuff like that, right? Now, the archaeologists use the same kind of methodology, but the methodology is now based upon what kind of tools did they have back then? Mm-hmm. What kind of a diet did they eat? What kind of did they have anything to communicate on these rock paintings of what their life was like. Now, the White Lady, if you look it up, is literally because it's a pigmentation helmet that was used in just that one image on that rock art. So they looked at the pigmentation. That's why they call it the White Lady. It's nothing to talk about anything in, what they call that thing?
It's not that the
UFO conspiracy, supporting analogies. Definitely not. It's just, it was cited, in that they used the pigmentation, so they had means of creating color. Then there was the funny, there's the interesting thing, about that specific cave or caves close to that cave. Of Tweefontein was it was another story that I heard about that how French archaeologists what they did was that they found this cave and then they started like cleaning the sand layers of the cave and then they discovered like proof of human presences at every level of at every soil structure level within the cave. So they literally discovered, like you've probably seen that diagram, what they've shown what of some European roads, that some of the European roads are built on old Roman roads that the Romans built.
Yeah.
And the bridges that the Romans left. Bridges that are 3,000 years old. Now, if we look at these particular things, your tourism sector, Helmut, definitely can span from there. Your tourism sector, Helmut, needs things like the cultural sector from the public sector to be invested in. Helmut, I can't go to a house there. Okay, I'll do this experiment on Friday. Even though I've got an event on Friday to cover. I'll do this experiment, Helmut, just to make the point.
Yeah.
I will walk through that facility just to potentially pick up one or two extra details that I probably did not know. Talk to the curator at hand. But your observation, and this is one of the things that always helps researchers, is that you observe what's there. Your observation will basically reinforce a scenario that you know of. We in Namibia, we're not taking Namibia's history serious. Namibia has a lot of stories to tell. Namibia has a lot more on offer, Helmut, besides just godforsaken dunes. I don't want to see sand, guys. I know there is sand. I don't want to see sand. I've been to Udusip. I feel sorry for the people living in the Kuisip. Helmut, there's a heat wave coming over those dunes there. You can basically bake everything outside. You won't need even natural gas or gas stove or even any format of modern cooking. You remember that thing that you
Except
and I were
doing? You're going to get cooked too. I mean, is this
that? Yes, Helmut, because your feet are burning through your shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Your feet are cooking through your shoes. That's how hot it is there.
Jeez.
So, in the reality of understanding the history of this country, there's a lot more to offer. Can I tell you another story just before we quickly take this ad, this live read?
Yeah.
There's a guy I interviewed during COVID here on Eagle FM when I started out. He's trying to run up a Swakopmund based genocide memorial kind of a scenario, because he's literally defending like the proof of the genocide at Swakop. There's an old cemetery there, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
That the one of the accusations that he's made before is that the town council and invested members of that community are trying to erase this historical evidence. This is one of like the proof, one of the element, the, you know, it's almost like the smoking gun that you need in forensics. So you've got the gun, but you're looking for the bullet. Where did the bullet go? Now, that graveyard is literally the bullet. You're looking for the bullet in your forensic analysis.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only guy defending it. He's the only guy that has been trying to keep that particular significant part of Namibia's history protected. One Namibian. One guy. Now, I'm telling you a reality based of a core part of Namibia's history that defines Namibia today.
Mm.
But in the discussion, from what you can see, what his uphill battle at the time was a scenario of how we really did not treasure historical elements in this country. We're not bringing, you know, we're not building like Helmut. I can think of all the places in this country that can have a significant museum installation. Windhoek can have like two or three. Windhoek needs to have more art galleries. Swakop needs to have at least two or three museums and at least five art galleries. Your tourism sector is not just about looking at sand and at an animal and, you know, living museums here and there that are like 500 kilometers out there in the bush. No one wants to drive out there in the bush. We're also consumers. The scenario is that we don't see the picture. Yeah. We quickly take a live read, dear listeners, and come back right after that. Velvita University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Accoucheur, Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy, Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences, Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvita University, where everyone is there.
And a quick break, and we'll continue on the other side. Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Batatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back. We are 3 minutes into the hour of six, so we have 57 minutes left to go. So we still have a lot to cover, one of them being, you know, I think for those of you that are regular Home Run listeners, you must have figured out by now that every time that we talk about an economy or a type of economy that either Africa or Namibia, Namibia or Africa overall have to participate in, I want to look at it beyond just us being being potential market, but I want to look at it from a perspective of do we have any means of participating in this thriving economy? Because I mean, right now we have a lot of positivities going on in terms of different economic avenues. We have there was a report on electric vehicles that came out. There's a lot of potential happening into that market. There's a lot of expansion. There's a lot of investment. There's a lot of money getting into the EV industry. And there's a lot of economic potential. But I wanted to look at it from, beyond being just consumers. Are we doing anything on an African level or on a Namibian level to participate in this economy? Whether it's beyond just being consumers and supplying the raw materials that are then processed into finished products that are making up these electronic components that makes up the overall car. And I want to look at basically, even the tourism industry from the same perspective, and I know that the UN tourism breaks things down into regions, and they have a lot of they basically pointed out a lot of positive things about Africa's tourism market. And one of those things they pointed out was arrivals in Africa was up 4%, continued to grow in the first quarter of 2026, with North Africa recording a 4% increase. Arrivals in Sub-Saharan Africa, which is where you and I find ourselves, also increased by 4% in the first 3 months of the first quarter of 2024. Now, this is the tourism industry, and they are looking at just the arrival of the tourists increasing on the at the same rate for both North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa. But this is mostly from a consumer perspective. in a way, we have this tourist sector that seems to be experiencing growth, and Namibia has a very a good tourism sector. So what? So the when I first basically read all through the, through those positive increase in the arrivals on the African on the African continent in terms of tourism, the first thing that came in my mind is, what are we doing on the ground to not just to participate into this industry, because now to alleviate things like unemployment and basically boost up our overall economy, not just as a country but also as a continent. So every industry, whether it's the food industry, whether it's agriculture, technology, AI, digital, or just anything that we're talking about on a global level, I always try my best to look at it from not just from a consumption level, because we're 1.4 billion. Of course, we have a lot of consumption, but here's the thing: what are we doing? Are we doing anything to participate? 7 minutes into the hour of six, and David just joined. And before we continue, we're basically going to continue together until the hour of seven. So let's take a call. Ding! Thank you for calling. That was a wonderful point. Moving on. So, David.
Yes, how is the early evening?
The early evening seems to be good. The tourism industry on the African continent seems to be doing good, but good, yes, general, but as an ordinary African, as an ordinary Namibian, I always want to find out in what ways are we participating into not just the tourism industry, but just any industry, be it energy or EV, as a continent. Are we participating beyond just consumers of whatever product? Even though when it comes to tourism, we have consumers that are coming in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's quite a very brilliant presentation. I was listening when I was outside there. But one thing that the question which I have is that regardless of the statistics that we have, if you compare North Africa, even the report before this one come out, North Africa has always been dominant in terms of attracting, tourists. The question that we're asking ourselves is that, what is that Southern Africa need to do? We have peace and stability, but people are still in terms of coming to us. But also the other thing that I have seen is, in the aspect of numbers and statistics.
Yeah.
When you look at, the current, tourism statistic report for 2025, which just came out now. It took long. The previous one even took longer. That is why if you dig deep, compare the current, UN report on tourism with the previous one, particularly that happened at the beginning of the year, then you realize that there are also some numbers that Namibia is missing. When other countries are rated, we are not there. Maybe it's an aspect of datas. But you raised a very interesting thing. Apart from now looking at tourists who are coming, how do we make sure that we utilize this opportunity as Africa? How do we make sure that we don't only rely on them, but we develop based on that? Singapore development was more based on tourism because they don't have what we have. But how can we do that? It's one thing to praise that we have everything. The other thing you also said about good intention will not bring anything. No. It's one thing to say, no, we have a natural ecosystem such as...
We have potential.
We have potential. And then there is nobody who ate potential, unutilized potential. And there's nobody who ate, unutilized talent and potential. That's why to me, the same question that you also asked is that what is that Southern Africa can do to make sure that when it comes to tourism, it's not only about the numbers, but also about impact. But what is interesting is also that when you look how the world is moving, even if people don't want to say it, Africa is a battleground for global powers. People don't see that. They think we are playing at the same level, but it's a battleground for stronger powers. If you compare tourism statistics, you compare with foreign direct investment. I was actually shocked to realize that developed economies are funding each other more than what we thought was happening.
Yeah. You know that question you asked me yesterday. How is the US the biggest
recipient of FDI.
Of FDI, but also the biggest FDI funder.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting to realize, to say, we may think we are at the same table, but the bigger guys are playing with each other. And the question is that what Africa can do. But on top of that, there is, I cannot remember on top of my mind the name, but it's a director within United Nations Trade and Development, that agency that produced that FDI report. What she said is that, yes, Africa can grow, or developing economies can grow, but they must stay in their lane. If I have to put it in simple terms, they should not compete to be like how other countries are at, particularly at the advanced level. But the question of tourism, I look at examples, the Windhoek City. I see what has been advocated for, to say, the artists, the people who are in the craftsmen, they must be connected with tourists. But look at the way they are positioned. Is that the best we can do? Is it in front of Avani?
And it's not just that.
Yeah. you understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Is that the best we can do? Is that attractive? Or is that the best the city can do?
And that thing there, that facade in front of in Independence,
And it's also positioning you as bangers. You know, it's also positioning you like you don't have any value. You depend so much on somebody to come and assist you. It's the same case with the readiness of our industry, our tourism sector.
Yeah,
there's no tourism without a bar and a restaurant. Yes. But are we people that have good and quality customer case in Namibia? Do we have that? If a taxi driver taking, and I'm sorry to say this, but I have to say it. If a driver of a shuttle transporting somebody from Teki came to Jose Akutagawa International Airport.
Where's Teki? Oh, from Turkey.
Yeah.
It's Turkey. They changed their name. Is this Namibia?
And came to Jose Akutagawa International Airport. The first thing that this person is going to be faced with, people are asking for money. They are not charging at the same standard.
Yeah.
They look at tourists and they look at them as ATM machine, which is actually wrong.
When I came into the office now, I don't know what's going on, but it seems like we've got like a major begging culture now around the tourism activity sector also.
Yeah.
Just to feed into what you're saying.
Yeah. No, it's what you do, because numbers will not help you if you are not ready. It's the same thing with, and this is an open mistake that maybe was done with good intention. Look at our education system.
Mm.
We produce a lot of quality people, but the industries is not accommodating them. It's the same thing that you can say. You can have numbers.
So we have the misalignment.
Almut,
remember yesterday when you mentioned that? We have the misalignment.
Yeah, that's why I think with numbers we must look at what does it mean. And also maybe, I don't want to say the ministry must employ a lot of data analysis to interpret. To say, for example, somebody must be able to explain, to say, if you have a 2025 Namibia tourism statistics, we show a little bit of a decline in terms of tourists which came to Namibia in 2025. Can somebody interpret that? What sector is booming? What opportunity can we create? Because it's one thing to have numbers, it's the other thing to interpret those data so that they can be used to make you know, right decisions.
Yeah.
Or evidence-based decision, not emotional-based decision. To say, no, you are going tomorrow, you are coming. But to say, you are going because these are the data.
Yeah.
I'm going to elevate you because the numbers are saying this.
But that's been the talk now. That Helmut and I, we've also re-emphasized since 2024.
Yeah.
End of 2024, when we did the data interoperability discussion.
Yeah.
Now, David, you it's a good thing you're highlighting that. Associated to the tourism stats that Ministry of Environment brought out last month, is immigration statistics.
Mm.
Immigration statistics is closely aligned to Ministry of Agriculture. For example, you see how many tomatoes are consumed. You see how many potatoes are consumed. How much milk is bought and consumed. So you get to, you draw a line through the data set. Now, here's the funny thing. The ministries already have those people, those data analysts. It's a regular administrative clerk. All the person has to just answer is, or the question they have to ask is the data that I'm getting verified? Does it speak to the reality on the ground? And who else can use this? And how am I getting it out into the Namibian economy? Because now I have to hear, today, the discussion you and I had. Today we have to hear about marginalized and the marginalized segments of Namibia's population from the 2023 census data. But you and I, the three of us, we know we can just read the census report of 2023 and we get an understanding of the situation.
You know, it's quite difficult. And also, going back to the other aspect that you stated regarding alignment, to say when these statistics are coming, are the institution aligning? Are they making sure that the NSA as a custodian of data is in line or is verifying those data? Because one of the things which was indicated, particularly looking at the high-level discussion on national statistics strategy, one of the things which was indicated is that we may have data and states, but the problem that we have is that are we coordinating with each other? Are we understanding each other? And are we also up to date? Because the same discussion, we can discuss about statistics as we want. But by the time you are done, a lot of things has already changed in the market. We are still in 2023.
Then you'll update.
How are we going to catch up?
Then you'll update your statistics and continue to discuss.
Because if you are in 2023 and you are writing an academic paper, you are just 2 years before your source becomes so old that the supervisor will not want it anymore. Which means that in the world of AI, we must upgrade our game to say, where are we? Why the tourism statistic report always take a long time to come out? Because other countries, they already have face of 2026.
What's the speed of data collection?
No, believe me, Yune, look at that, read that report again and tell me if we have statistic of 2026 in Namibia.
No, never.
It's not there.
Never. But you know what South Africa does?
No, other countries have. I've seen the graph. I've seen the graph of the previous report to say Namibia was always missing when it comes to those statistics. But 2023, yes, maybe we are getting there. But very slowly. You know, you need to be positive. No, the thing is, one thing I believe with all my heart, and this is the most religious thing I would say today, is that the possibility of things to work well is there. But it's not guaranteed within a given time frame unless we change the way we do things. The possibility of Namibia to be advanced and industrialized is undeniable. It's going to happen. But you also don't need to be shocked that it might happen in 30 years or 40 years.
Yeah, when we are not here.
When you are awake, when I'm a grandfather.
30, 40 years.
I won't be here.
Yeah, you see?
That's the minimum.
For us men, in Namibia, we won't live past 60, guys, please.
No. There's a caller, eh?
Malarepu.
Malarepu tate. Matagorapo, Morogeni.
Morogeni, Tashiende.
Tashiende. What channel you are now?
On Sprat T2. Okay, we are talking about
tourism. When you may say, what? When you may say, when you may so black me, man. Boy. Oh, man. You may so black me, man. Who can that man say? Who are more men say?
I don't
want to swim. Who are men? Who are men?
Namada.
Was the club made in it? Nams languages. So you guys, let me greet you formally because we may go beyond the. Otherwise, how are you doing, people?
Shap. How you say?
Cool. Was clowny. You know, I used to speak Afrikaans very well. When I go to look for job, where you find that Kapena Oilonga, that is me, where at me. That is the first word I have heard. I started knowing in Afrikaans. And at one point, I found myself there looking for a job working. Hey, Manuel, what suki are you so? Ek suk verek. Ah, that's me verek hiso ni. No, I come verek hiso. So it was so impressive and interesting. But nowadays we are forgetting our own languages, our own indigenous languages. Uh-huh. We must go back. So Dwight, yesterday we were talking about historians, researcher, we are not having them and all these things. And they are saying that if you cannot perhaps note some of those concepts and terms in your own language, it will be very difficult for you to translate them into, say, developmental terms. So it will be very confusing. But how do we do it if we do not have those words? And are you saying that the ministry, I mean, our institutions are not developing those kind of people or what? I'm just still wondering from your conclusion of yesterday that we don't have them. Can't we gather them and sponsor them and give them some bursaries or some, you know, financial boost? Like what?
I'll be honest, Angabona.
Yeah?
And it's the same thing that, like last week, I went to a workshop, which was a 1-hour workshop. But yeah, it worked for my time. But people love asking the question, what do we need?
What needs to happen? How do we achieve goals in Namibia? So I'll just be honest. We need money. Straightforward. If you want someone to do something for you, be willing to pay to put up the money. So, comment I made yesterday about we need more historians. We need our own archaeologists. We need our own researchers, more of it specifically, because, it seems that NCRST will be bringing out the research and development, report, how many years, because we don't know when the next cycle would be, but we are lacking in the humanities field. I have to buy books every month just to understand what was the prehistoric value that Namibia and Southern Africa has had about before the colonial chapter of Southern Africa began. And I'm reading this about Germans, South Africans, Japanese. There's a book that was written by a Japanese guy who's fixated with the San communities here in Southern Africa. So we need our own researchers, and our research institutions need to put the money up and pay these people. And then you'll have the likes like David, who will be willing to study political science for the rest of his life in Namibia. Helmut, that will be able to pursue a complete entertainment and cultural and activity in Namibia. You'll have Dwight that would love to become a formal historian in Namibia. But when you ask the question, what do I need to study to achieve that goal? There are clear disconnects to achieve that. And we have major gaps.
Now that those areas that have been identified as gap and need, why is it that people cannot be convinced, even when you are talking here, that yes, guys, this is what we need? Why are the people not doing that?
It's potentially the involvement level. Like who is there? I mean, I asked once, what's the Green Hydrogen Institute at UNAM? I asked the lady, the one lady who's like an advanced student now. She's finished her like basic honors degree, and she's part of, because I know her sister, and she said when they heard about green hydrogen, this was like a like the first time I'm hearing about this particular thing. So in order for us Namibians to stop being caught off guard with developments, and when you look at tourism, Angabwana, we can add more value to tourism by having more museums, more art galleries. David mentioned it now, that I saw in front of here in Independence Avenue. Why can't the city of Windhoek just declare that thing no longer a parking and fully make it a craft market, and then it actually serves its purpose? It's close to the consumer, and it's close to the money, and it's very central, and it actually gives a purpose to the CBD of the city.
And we can also then emulate them and start creating those village tourism in the rural areas and all these things. Is it that we who are identifying the need are not reaching the right people, or is it that is just a denial of availing the resources, or what is the issue? That's what I wanted to know. That's what I want to know. What is the problem? What's preventing us? Is it blindness, or maybe spiritually blindness? What is it?
Angabwana, please define spiritually blind, please.
No, everybody must be blind, because they always talk about the blind spot or whatever, green, what, or grace, or gray what? Or gray spot or something like that.
And now that spirituality has entered the conversation, Ekavango must explain.
So thank you very much, guys. I just wanted to because I was following and you are talking about very important things. But
right.
For me, because of my limited knowledge, I don't know how to come in. I don't know how to rephrase my English and whatever. So thank you. God bless.
All right.
Yeah. Look. We will always have these questions, but since we are now in a new perspective, and this is now aligning with that state visit discussion Helmut and I had yesterday.
Yeah.
There's a lot of attention now on Namibia. Namibia will now be in like in a new focus of what is going on here.
Yeah.
Now, here's one of the things now. We know we've got a tourism sector, but the tourism sector has so many incomplete ends. You know, it's incomplete. It's not fully, it's not a fully like shaped, and you know, because
it's too clustered.
No, not the clustering. You can still absorb more.
Uh-huh.
There is no saturation.
Uh-huh.
There's no optimal saturation limit because you don't know where it is, Amud. But here's the thing. We can morph that beast into something else. We can bring in arts and crafts markets, more of them across the country. We can bring in museums across the country, formalize them, make them bigger, encourage further particular arts and cultural developments and artifacts to be developed, to be given to these museums.
Yeah.
We can encourage, we can open up more art galleries, because the artists, we have to be honest, they are professionals. They need a consumer to buy the thing they make.
No, you are correct. You know, I think there's also an aspect of us being able to tell our stories as Namibians and also owning the industry.
Yes.
There was a debate to say, when you speak about Namibian tourism sector, look at, not to say bad about other people, look at who is dominating that space. Is it really Namibians who are dominating that place, particularly at the bigger level?
Mm.
Are Namibians funded?
Mm.
Especially to compete in that space. You speak about marginalized community.
Mm.
You know, tourists, they want to learn our stories.
Mm.
Most of them, they've been very interested in the history of Ovahimba, Ovato, and others. They want to understand.
And Helmut mentioned like the living museums that they have.
Yeah.
What's not to love about USAID Special Combo? For just 219 Namibian dollars, you can get 5 bags of essential foods, 2.5 kilograms of Champion Super maize meal, 5 kilos of Bokomo Fed Cooked Flour, 2 kilograms of nice rice, 1 kilo of selected grande pasta, and 2 kilograms of marathon sugar. That's just 219 Namibian dollars for 5 bags of essential products. Yes, we all say at USAID.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
What's not to love about You Say Special Combo? For just 219 Namibian dollars, you can get 5 bags of essential food, 2.5 kilograms of Champion Spoon maize meal, 5 kilos of Bokomo Fed Cooked Flour, 2 kilograms of Nice Rice, 1 kilo of Selected Grande Pasta, and 2 kilograms of Marathon Sugar. That's just 219 Namibian dollars for 5 bags of essential products. Yes, we all say at You Save.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news?
Welcome back. We are 29 minutes. We have 29 minutes left to the hour of 7. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmed, Dwight, and David. You know, hard disk drive. And you guys were about to say?
I was talking about Namibian being able to tell their own story and also to look, to have confidence in our own story.
Yeah.
Unlike when you see a tourist, we see money and we start looking like beggars. And maybe also to have a very good understanding of the environment to say if there is a lot of stories, there is a lot of movies, documentaries being done about the history of Namibians, particularly for those who maintain their culture and their standard at that level. There are a lot of movies being played in that aspect. What are the Namibians doing? How many people from Opuo have much interest in that, not them to be presented as, you know, individuals to tell stories, but how many of them they own that industry. You speak about the living museums.
Yeah.
But the other thing is also about the other aspect of tourism to say it's becoming so attracting people, particularly looking at cultural tourism. It becomes so diluted because Namibians, we thought things that we had were not imported until we realized that people are still coming to look and understand them.
Yeah.
That's why the aspect of cultural tourism has also being able to come in to say, to what extent are we preserving that? What is the role of these guys in the Ministry of Education? How do we call them? Art and Culture. They are Art and Culture Officer.
Directorate, yeah.
No. There is a position. I don't know.
No,
cultural officers.
You also find them in the regional.
They are cultural officers, but what do they do really about this aspect? What is their role? Are they coordinating with other institutions or just for vibes? Because if we are not be able to do that, do you know that you can have less than 1 million tourists in the country, but you made a lot of money, then you also attracted quality people. Because at the end of the day, when you look at those numbers of tourists which are coming into the country or Southern Africa, we must also be able to look at the impact which they are leaving.
Mm.
Not to say, no, a taxi driver was paid 50, euro for a tip and somebody was given this amount of money, but the real business that is coming from there, because you also have tourists who are traveling for business.
Mm.
But, you know, getting there, we are getting there. The problem that we are still suffering with now, even in looking at that the global statistic, report on tourism, is fragmentation. If you ask one question, every corner of the class is answering. But you are good with mathematics. You are supposed to answer mathematics questions, and that is your responsibility. And somebody is good with history. That was supposed to be the responsibility. But if you speak about tourism now, as we are speaking, you have the Ministry of Environment and Tourism. You have Namibia Investment Promotion Development Board. You have, how do you call this institution? Namibia Tourism Board, right?
Mm.
Then you also have Namibia Trade Forum.
Mm.
Then you also have an established bureau within the Investment and Promotion Board. And then
you've got the private sector one known as Team Namibia.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Then with all of those, it's not a problem for them to exist. Do they talk to each other?
It's not just that.
Mm.
It's the ministry they find themselves under now.
They are different.
It's now two different ministries where you had a dedicated ministry for commercial activity.
Yeah.
Now you are split between the guys that only knew mining and energy, and the guys that only knew how to shake hands at international relations events. And now, if you go ask those PROs from international relations, how do you guys balance the trade component? Do you guys know what to do? And then they'll tell you, Dwight, You're right. We are there.
Yeah, we are doing our best. Very diplomatic.
We are there. And I'm like, what does that mean?
But until we come to the point where we know exactly what we want and we know exactly what's stopping us to move so fast, then we can get things right. But for now, we'll still continue moving. Yeah. The issue of business was solved by the president with one-stop shop at BIPA. That is what people are expecting to other institutions to say. Not to say we integrate everything into one or having five ministries.
But BIPA's issue is BIPA needs to generate data as well.
Indeed. No, it
BIPA needs to tell the economy.
Yeah.
You know, how many registrations, how many closures, how many businesses are operating, how many, what's that thing that they said, the thing that was waived? The fee?
The penalties.
No, those fees. To keep your business name and your stuff.
Yeah, I know what we're talking about, yeah.
Highlight how many... They should generate this data stuff. Now you just have to hear, if you're a business person, people are saying, come and re-register.
Mm.
You thought you were done with the registration.
You know, data is very important, especially when there is money involved.
Yeah,
because with BIPA, there was a time I raised that question too, to say you guys, you are dealing with richness in terms of data. You even need monthly updates and statistics to say, these are how many businesses in Namibia, not only about those who are registered, but also those who have moved from this scale, from this blanket to others.
Yeah.
How many SMEs graduated to, you know, advanced businesses?
Exactly.
How many businesses start competing regionally? Because you will be shocked that we are celebrating numbers to say these are thousands and hundreds of thousands of registered business or operational businesses. But the question is that, did they grow?
Mm.
How come we don't have a yet internationally competing or continentally competing company yet from Namibia? What happened there? Maybe those statistics will be able to assist us.
And when we had it, that company is now predominantly owned by, is the Dutch? It's now a Dutch company.
Mm.
So it's no longer Namibian.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting aspect to look at to say, apart from how many, what does it mean?
Yeah.
How can I use them?
Yeah.
Because you can give me the same report, but I will interpret it differently.
You know, I'll link that to the point that Dwight has made several times. When we are looking at the performance or economic size of countries, especially in developing countries, that's the category we fall under in Africa.
Yeah.
We like to use a lot of fancy words, we have this in terms of GDP, this in terms of of trade.
Mm.
But if you are talking, if you are talking about when you look at all those numbers that you're explaining in very fancy financial terms, how does it link to how it's benefiting an ordinary Namibian or an ordinary African? Drawing that link is, I think it's something that a lot of people will find very difficult.
Mm. No, you are right, because it's what it is to say we focus more on things that are not. They can be imported, but they will not assist you at that moment.
We like fancy English.
Yeah. And we like to be there at the highest level, discussing about those problems. Do you know that if we just have to take a random statistic about Namibia developmental trajectory, developmental, journey for the past 6 months.
Yeah.
You take how many conferences were held about what is going to be done
in this year?
In this year alone.
How many
additional conferences?
Just
to convince you about the other one to say we are still on track. And how many? Because it's not only about inaugurating of things, but it's also about how many institutions did we build? How many projects did we complete?
Yeah.
How many data we generated? Speak about the data related to 257 million fund that the 8th administration gave us to the young people. Where is it? Where are the numbers? How many people are functional and operational?
Yeah.
At what level? those are things that we are talking about, because that would be another, not only white elephant, but maybe it's going to be a blue elephant if it's not, if not completed. But what I'm trying to say is that, as you indicated, we don't ask those questions to say, what does it mean?
Mm.
What does it mean when, the statistics are saying 70% of your population is young people?
Yeah.
What does it mean when, the young people who register to vote did not come and vote? What does it mean when you have a proposal, I mean, you have an engagement about the drafting of a nuclear bill, but only 10 people that showed up? You know, it's very shocking. Have you seen
or, that? Or the governor has to show the people away.
Yeah?
Or the governor has to tell...
People
has,
do
has
not... Yeah,
basically
yeah.
Preposition.
What does it mean? Is it really that people do not understand or information is not given?
Yeah.
Or previously you did not come back to them? You just come for formality.
Or the awareness creation exercise was lacking. What was it?
Or
and I know the awareness creation. Because, and this is what the PROs in these ministries have to understand. I'm now going to hit them over the head with a statement.
Mm.
You've got to advertise.
Mm.
Come and pay the money to us.
For the millionth time. What's your status?
Does not work. Us journalists, we will concoct a sentence there that is not your sentence anymore. That serves our purpose.
Come and speak.
If you want the message to go out verbatim. Mm. No, not come and speak. Pay advertising.
Yeah.
We want money. We don't want them to come and speak.
Yeah.
Pay the money and broadcast your message.
Yeah. And this is
Look, man, if you paid, you can just come and speak if you want to come and speak.
Pay also to come and speak.
It's paying first.
Yeah. Pay the money first.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and this says a lot about if you see only 10 people showed up for the nuclear bill, drafting of a nuclear bill.
Mm.
What does it say about communication that you used to communicate, things that you used to put on your website? Do people even read it, or you are just wasting government money? What is your communication strategy? Because you need to change your communication strategy. If you have a church, just for example, and you're always preaching, it's only 2 people that are showing up. You must work on your communication strategy. Maybe you're tired too.
That is true.
You understand. Yeah, maybe the way you present, you may have a good message. Because nuclear is very important. I like that. And when it's going to happen here, I'll be the first person to be there because of that. But, do you communicate to people? What does it mean? Because other people, when they hear nuclear, they look at war. They think it's an atomic bomb. It's the only relation.
Yeah.
They think nuclear is only uranium.
If you ask Anna Kleta right now, Anna Kleta will tell you that thing that happened last week.
Yeah.
The local people in Rundu, in Kavango East, were saying, what does it have to do with my life?
You see?
And that is the principal message.
Yeah.
That was missing. Mm. What does it have to do with the life of the person on the street?
Mm.
Now,
not a good time to beg a Vango in the studio.
No, but it was factual.
Don't play victim.
It was factual. It was logical, and it was to the point. No. The people on the ground asked Anacleta a straightforward question about what does this thing have to do with my life?
No, it's the same. It's also happened in Oshakati.
That too.
Yeah, imagine you can go to Oshakati, send a capital town of the north, if you have to put it that way.
Yeah.
But even people, they did not show up. Engineering students did not show up. Ordinary people did not show up because people do not even understand that it's through that bill that it will impact your electricity.
Yeah.
Because the aim of that bill is to make sure that Namibia has a consistent legal framework to allow utilization of uranium.
Exactly.
But when you say nuclear, people think, kaboom.
Yeah.
But it's not going to work. It's not that way. I think it's just information.
Yeah. Ad break before we come back, guys.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a U-Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only 25 Namibian dollars. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just 18.99 Namibian dollars. Get 2 kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just 49.99 Namibian dollars. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for 28.99 Namibian dollars. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only 12.99 Namibian dollars. U-Save. Where else?
Welcome back. We are 15 minutes to 6. And, well, like I just pointed out, there's a reason why I'm not switching the camera on me, because we are talking about nuclear conference gone wrong in my region. But look, I think this is where I keep going back to communicate. Now, the question that you just pointed out, Dwight, that it's the question that Anacleta was asked. Now, imagine someone who doesn't speak a word out of the English language, or just speak basic communication language, but they don't have basic science knowledge to understand nuclear.
Yeah.
How do you explain that to them? Because I mean, it's a genuine concern.
Yeah.
You brought this conference to them because it's about a bill that will turn into a law that will impact their life. Now, and they're asking you a question of, what does this have to do with my life? You know, it will have, it will impact their life in one or another. Now, the question is, how do you explain that in a language they understand?
Mm. That is not our job. That is the job of your home region and its officials for the regional council. That is the job of every PRO who doesn't understand what advertising is, because you and I and David, we can see. That was advertising. But they just needed to have an advertising budget.
Okay, Tereno, this is how I'm picturing it, how it went. Tereno.
Why are you switching languages?
Ngurova, ngatu karanashi gongi.
Yeah.
Sha, ngamu ya nuclear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ain't know where that's going to fly.
No, but it's not going to fly, because then they'll ask you, what does nuclear mean still in Zimbukushu? And then, Helmut?
It will make you kaboom.
At least in Afrikaans, the word exists for nuclear. It's Karen. Kernkrach.
Man, you guys nailed it. Yeah. You know how Hollywood like to make, a crazy blonde who is always called a Karen?
Yeah.
I think Afrikaans nailed it, Karen.
No, that one becomes Karen.
Now that one is... So it also happened in Oshakati.
Yeah, it happened in Oshakati.
So, there was a low turnout. But what I don't understand about Toshagat is there was a high turnout at that Husky. But look.
Yeah, look, you know what I'm always saying about important things. You know, maybe we don't attend important things. Maybe somebody's capitalizing on our ignorance, or maybe we are not well informed, or those who are charged with the responsibility don't do that. Do you know that for a team to move around the whole country, that is a wasting of resources?
No, it's not a waste. David, don't say waste.
No. Look, if you are just doing it for formality.
Yeah.
Because you are required to do public consultation.
Yeah.
But you did not do your communication strategy very well to make sure that people...
I understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't fully implement a coordinated effect, effort because you hoped that a WhatsApp communication strategy would materialize in the feed showing up.
You don't want to prioritize the Gale FM so that you can
first
communicate.
Anjay, thank you, David.
That's it's the same thing I spoke about KPI.
Yeah.
To say you are just fulfilling a duty, but can you really say you consult if you only have 9 people that showed up in that region?
Mm. Or like my brother likes to say, Frederico, when the PROs are talking to you, then they said, no, we shared the information. But it was only one side talking.
Mm.
They were only presenting on PowerPoints and saying, thank you guys, here's the coffee, there are the sandwiches, clap.
And the information that is sent is not even simplified. Because if my grandmother go and attend the nuclear,
presentation.
The presentation, the drafting of that bill, who is going to make her understand?
Yeah.
Because she's a citizen, she was supposed to participate.
Yeah.
Who simplify?
She voted. She feels like she needs to understand the subject matter.
Mm.
But the person standing in front doesn't have the patience. Or the person in front is skipping key information.
They bring in an expert to give a presentation. Who doesn't know the community. From there, you sign attendance register. Then there are snacks. Then life continue. That part is very important to a lot of Namibians.
Doing the Namibian thing by throwing Africans. I'm like,
maybe I went to get there. Maybe they are going to rework on it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Look at it this way. A few days ago, I went through the Afrobarometer report on youth's interest and basically developmental. Let me just say developmental discussions, because that's what all these engagements are about.
Yeah.
They looked at basically youth group from 15 to 24, and then 25 to 34.
Yeah.
One thing they noticed, Ed, was that the 15 to 24 don't show up to event.
Yeah.
More
why
than,
does that sound okay, like okay, last year's actually, elections?
Actually, push it all the way. They looked at two main categories. 15 to 34 and 35 upwards.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to attending stakeholder engagements or all these community meetings that relates to either especially economic discourse.
Yeah.
Now, whether it's especially just think of it in general, public consultations, discussion.
Yeah.
The 34 and below don't show up a lot to these events. They don't show up a lot to vote. Mm. They don't show up a lot to these engagements. But so that means the 35 and above show up a lot in number compared to the 34 to the 34 and below.
Mm, mm, mm.
So, you know, the only one aspect, I think there were about five categories that these two age groups were measured in.
Yeah.
Or were compared in. Now, there was only one aspect that the 34 and below dominated in terms of participation.
Yeah.
Protest. So if you are not showing up for public consultation,
yeah,
that means you don't know much about what's happening in the public consultation discussions.
Mm. So Afrobarometer basically proves,
what are you protesting about?
So Afrobarometer basically proves that there's a disconnect in the reality, the thinking processes of 34 and below.
Yeah.
Sorry, David.
Yeah.
Is that you're still your age group?
We'll discuss that on the way forward. look, ne?
Yeah.
There is somebody who participate in a social event or a political event because of public anger. As you mentioned, protest.
Yeah.
In Namibia, you can find young people can wake up and attend a political rally or can go to protest, but they do not have a ground why they are protesting, just because they are angry. It's like somebody was telling me to say, a depressed person can go to a funeral and just to cry, just to make sure that the anger and the situation
release the emotion.
Release the emotion.
Yeah. Just go to funeral for food.
I thought people went there for the food.
But what I'm trying to indicate is that if the way we show up at Kasi Vibe is the way we show up at nuclear drafting of bills, if the way we watch this telenovela and all other things is the way we follow Parliament.
No, they must follow us, Eagle FM, Hooters.
Not Parliament. The same thing with economic discussions.
Yeah.
Because you just find somebody who is very angry. It's an educated Namibian, maybe has a diploma or a degree, and is just saying, you know, I'm very angry. People are corrupt, man. People are just corrupt. Then I ask the question, who is corrupt? Is it really that you have facts? Do you know that there are these opportunities?
Do you know how many fires I had to correct an uncle of mine who just kept saying, the government is corrupt. And I asked him,
which part? Where?
No, it's everywhere. Yeah, but where?
Mm.
Show, you know, let's get into the grains, the granular discussion. And people are walking around with a perception, which you guys have already proven.
Mm.
The perception is there. But if you ask them, okay, now please come and participate, then they also go and say, nah, I've got, you know, better things to do. Let me go and watch football or drink a beer or treat an election voting day as a literal holiday, which happened last year.
And I'm always telling people that somebody who don't understand the context of the matter, that person will kill you, not knowing that it's killing you.
Definitely.
People who do not understand things, just even the basics, because they will end up doing decisions just based on what they are thinking.
Yeah.
But do not know what will happen.
That right there is why a German philosopher by the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer argued that stupidity is more dangerous than evil. Because we have a lot of mechanisms.
No, say that again.
We have a lot of mechanisms. And look, he made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
We have a lot of mechanisms of how to deal with evil people.
Yeah.
We have, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, we have your traditional healers, your churches.
Yeah.
That's a way, if you can look at it that way, of dealing with evil. We have the, you know, we have the correctional facilities, we have the police and all this. All that is how to deal with people that are considered not in line morally with society.
Yeah.
But when it comes to someone who is stupid, we don't have any mechanism in place
except
ignore them. And well, more often...
At your own risk again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's a thought statement because somebody who you do not know which direction to push the person into. I think our leaders, they also go through a lot. Particularly managing people is not an easy thing. I'm just saying that you find somebody who does not even move forward, backward, east or west. You just don't know what the person wants.
Yeah.
But the person wants to participate, but the person does not want to listen and read. But you know, coming back to the conversation about consultation, I just hope that we learn from pain, because we have already failed to learn from wisdom. The other thing that we need to learn from is from pain. To say, what does it mean when you have voter apathy? What does it mean when you have because everybody in Namibia need electricity.
Yeah.
But when you are saying drafting of a nuclear bill, you know, people think only of nuclear weapon, but people are speaking about energy poverty that we have in Namibia. Just to remind you that the ECB this month again is going to present the tariffs in bucks. Is it going to be an increase or going to be subsidization? But because electricity does not have a reverse gear, continue to go up unless
David, you and you guys must be finding
unless really it comes to the point where we are self sustaining in terms of electricity, that can only come from showing up at a consultation.
Yeah. Participating in an elections.
Yeah, because people think influencing of government is only through elections.
But the downside is also, you can't have the scenario that happened with me last year.
Mm.
I don't know any of the faces in Windhoek East. And I'm voting for people who I never heard a campaign speech from in my life. And I must give a vote. Do you know what's the biggest injustice? Is when you are forced to vote or select three options that are not your main options.
No,
So you had to do an inimini.
I literally did any minimum.
All right, we have 2 minutes left with our of seven, so wrapping up time.
Okay, conclusion 1, 2, 3. You start, Helmut.
Goodbye. Next.
It's not a 2 minute.
2 minutes conclusion.
On your side, David, what final thoughts you want to leave?
I think the conversation must be extended. We must follow what Helmut has said, to say we must think and interpret things beyond the obvious. It's not only about the document, but the meaning of the document and how it can change lives. I do not need to have 20 million tourists coming into Namibia, but Namibian people are still continue to be poor. Or the craftsman is still standing in front of, Avani?
Yeah.
Still in front of Avani. And for our logistical operators looking like beggars. And these people, they must respect us. So you don't come to Namibia just like you are coming to a charity, a charity foundation.
Yeah.
But you are coming to a country.
Yeah.
And we can only boost our confidence if we present that. And I think maybe last year also to work on our hospitality sector and how to deal with tourists.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Because, it's either we are begging from them or robbing them. One of the two. Which is a terrible idea.
We're no
we don't want to get to the...
We're no fair. Begging them or robbing them. But on that note, guys, let's see each other again tomorrow, same time, same place.